broadcasting across the internet, GeekSpeak with Aldi and Dirk. And now, here's GeekSpeak.
Hello, everybody!
Yeah, you gotta start off like that, don't you?
Everybody!
Everybody! And you're like, actually, Wolfman Jack the Nerd.
You know what that is?
No.
It's from Adam Curry's podcast.
Oh, is that what it is?
Hello, everybody!
Really?
But I do, hello, everybody!
Oh, yeah, that's totally different. Totally different. You're such a poser, man.
I'm such a fan.
Oh, man, I tell you what.
All right.
Aldi. Yeah.
Hey, so welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah.
We're
not even going to number this one.
Should we just stop?
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay. All right.
Think about that.
File that one away. So, we got, quite the packed little show this week, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
We got a double.
Yeah.
Double header?
Yeah.
First.
Well, hopefully not a doubleheader. That means it's going to be like 4 hours long if that's the case.
Yeah, I hope not. These guys have bedtimes, right?
Yeah, and they got like kids and jobs and shit like that.
Right.
So that's bad.
Right.
But we do have an unprecedented number of user calls there on this one.
Yeah, definitely.
Like way more than we've ever had. Like four times as much.
Four times more, I think.
Which is good and bad, actually, which means we're probably not going to talk as much or we're not going to lead the conversation as much. So let's go ahead and introduce our guests.
Yeah.
We got Rob Davido.
Davio. Yes.
And Craig Van Ness
from Hasbro. Welcome.
Thank you. This is Rob.
Craig here.
Okay.
Try that again.
No.
Go ahead, Rob.
Hi, this is Rob.
Okay. Craig?
It's Craig here.
All right.
Slightly different. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Actually, I guess you guys aren't from Hasbro. You're actually from the Avalon Hill section of Hasbro, yes?
Well, we used to be.
Oh.
So we are part of Hasbro Games.
Oh, really?
Oh, didn't know there was a difference.
Which includes Parker Brothers and Milton Bradley and Tiger Games.
Tiger.
Okay. All under one roof. Tiger, which mostly does
the Tiger?
No. Electronics.
Oh, Tiger Electronics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Cool.
Okay, so yeah, so go ahead and do us the org chart that you promised.
Yeah, the Hasbro org chart.
Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of different org charts to get to this one, but this one's fairly straightforward. There's Hasbro itself, which is a toy company, which is in Rhode Island, and Hasbro has two different game divisions. There's Hasbro Games in Massachusetts, where we work, and there is Wizards of the Coast on the West Coast, where we don't work.
That's good, because that would be a hell of a commute for
it. It would be very, very tiring.
Yeah.
Boy, are my arms tired.
Yeah, okay.
All right, okay.
Go ahead. So.
Well, we haven't actually introduced what these guys do, if anyone knows. Yeah.
Okay. He's getting to that. He's part of the org chart. Right?
Okay. Keep going.
We work well. Let me just finish the org chart quickly. Like I said, we do Milton Bradley, Parker Brothers, Tiger Games at our end, which are largely mass market games. And Wizards of the Coast does role-playing games and collectible card games and mostly hobby market games at their end. And you know, there's a little bit of overlap from time to time, but that's sort of the simple version of the org chart. And Avalon Hill, which used to be in our building, moved over to their building maybe 2 or 3 years ago because it was
there
more of a hobby market fit.
Wizards of the Coast?
Well, over to Wizards of the Coast.
Oh, okay.
So it became another brand that they develop over there.
Okay. So what do you guys do then?
I'll let Craig go first. He's got seniority.
Well, we do a variety of different games for Hasbro. Even when we were working on Avalon Hill games, I also carried a bunch of licensed games. I mean, anywhere from like Powerpuff Girl games to Goosebump games to Star Wars games, whatever the hot mass market license is out there. Because a lot of the game design work at Hasbro, Milton Bradley, Parker Brothers tends to be designing games for licenses or looking at inventor submissions or coming up with your own ideas and co-brands as well.
Okay.
Hmm. Co-brands is?
Co-brands meaning like sort of like a Rich 2210 would be considered a co-branded item or Trivial Pursuit DVD.
Saturday Night
Pop
Live.
Culture or True. Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
Or Lord of the Rings. I did
Lord
that.
Of the Rings.
What about Axis and Outlaws? D-Day and all that?
What about Axis and Outlaws?
Is that part of it as well?
Axis and Outlaws used to be a Milton Bradley game, part of the Game Master series in the 80s.
Right.
But then X now has Europe and Pacific were released under the Avalon Hill label. So when Avalon Hill got moved over to Wizards of the Coast, Axis and Allies went with it.
Okay.
So we worked on Europe and Pacific, Craig and I did, but not the refresh and things that have happened in the past 2 years.
So suffice to say you guys are title is game designer?
Game designer.
Okay.
Yep.
We are game designers. It's it runs the gamut from game inventing to a lot of game development.
And a lot of evaluating as well. I mean, a lot of we work a lot. We work on a lot of inventor submissions as well. So you know,
an inventor submission being like some guy comes up with a game idea, sends it in.
Sure.
That kind of stuff.
Yep.
So in other words, unsolicited and all that.
Yeah. So you guys are soliciting for designs, right? You should be deluged with designs, right?
Well, yes, yes, and no. there is a game inventing community that we have relations with. And unfortunately for some people listening, we don't take unsolicited submissions.
That's what I
know. I'm throwing them underneath the bus.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to stop the bus.
All right. Well, we got that out of the way.
Yeah, there's a whole department that sorts through different submissions from different inventors or inventing houses all over the world and winnows them down, and there's several sort of checkpoints. And at some point, they cross a designer's desk where we play them and try to figure out if it's a fit.
Okay. So,
all right, so what's an average day for a game designer, a.k.a. what do you guys do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, you know, mostly meetings. And some
couple emails.
Couple emails, surf the web.
Yeah.
Then it's time for lunch.
Yeah. Right on. So corporate America, in other words, really.
Well, there are meetings, but it's a large company, and so that comes with that's neither good nor bad. But it's our job is kind of threefold as a game designer. We have to make sure the game plays well, which is the obvious one that everyone thinks of, and that includes, you know, playing it and designing it and writing the rules. But we also have to make sure that it fits in the box, and we have different box sizes and different restrictions, and we go back and forth working on what the box size for that game will be, and so we figure out how big the little cardboard pieces can be or how tall the plastic pieces can be. And then the third thing is we have to actually make sure that it makes money. So as much as we want the super real 24-karat gold-plated pieces, sometimes that just doesn't work out.
Mm. Yeah, we have a fire.
I don't know if you can hear that. It's my fire alarm going off. Hold on a second.
Check out the fire alarm. It's probably the brother-in-law doing a little spot of cooking. But, anyway, okay. So, all right. So, like...
So, the average day is playing games probably more than most people play at work, but not as much as we'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of time sitting at our desk and just trying to figure out, you know, exactly how thick the cardboard needs to be or if we can mold this particular piece with his arm up like this or if it needs to be down at his side.
Wow, so that's pretty nitty-gritty.
Yeah, there's a lot of nitty-gritty stuff, especially with a you know, a game line like HeroScape. I mean, when it comes down to specing exactly what colors on our, you know, what color Raylan's thigh pad is, that's, you know, that's me.
Really?
It does that.
Yeah, and so, it's not me, and I'm so happy.
So
it comes in, you know, some days, like today, we... You know, I pretty much played games all day, but I'm working on getting scenarios done for the next wave of HeroScape line of stuff. So, I mean, that's what needs to get done today. But, you know,
actually,
most days, you know, it's, you know, crossing your eyes. I mean, crossing your T's and dotting your I's.
Mm-hmm. I cross my eyes a lot at work. I find that it helps a lot with the repetitive motions and
disorder.
Something, yeah. Yeah, okay, so I have another question then. So how could you be working on those expansions for HeroQuest if they're supposed to be due out this month?
Escape.
Whatever, that's what I meant.
Well, the first one, the first wave should be out this week, maybe next week.
Yeah, the first wave should be out this week next week.
Okay.
We have other things on the drawing board that we need to stay ahead of the curve. At this point, we're working anywhere from 3 to 24 months out.
Jeez, really?
In terms of, yeah, I mean, we're starting to look at ideas from inventors that realistically will be under Christmas trees in, 2 years from now.
Wow.
Wow, that's a pretty big development time.
How many projects are you working then at any one time?
Well, as few as one if it's a big project, and as many as six, eight, I'm trying to think. That sound about right, Craig?
Yep. It depends on the project. I mean, HeroScape's a really big project, so I've pretty much worked exclusively on HeroScape, you know, with doing some evaluations here and there when I can to help out. But, you know, there's been years when, you know, I've put out as many as, I don't know, 10 to 12 games, or worked on as many as 10 to 12 games, because, I mean, Rob will tell you, too, that a lot of the stuff that you work on never sees the light of day. So.
Yeah. At least not in the form that you thought it did. Sometimes you can go back and salvage your own work for a different game.
So, like, what percentage do you think actually do see the light of day?
By the time we decide that we're going to make a game and we have agreement from all the different departments, like marketing likes the sound of it and management likes the sound of it and sales likes the sound of it, at that point, it's probably 80% or higher. But if you talk about all the game ideas that are discussed in one form or another or come in the door, it's probably less than 10%. So there's a lot of stuff that sounds interesting or you spend a day on or you evaluate or you talk to some people or it goes around, and eventually there's just not enough agreement that everyone likes it. But you haven't really been doing design work at that point. You've just been talking about the possibility.
We call that shooting the shit.
That's the shit filter.
Yeah. Okay. So, how many of you people are working there at Hasbro, designers?
12. I'm trying not to, you know, sit here with a long pause and count my.
No, that's fine. That's cool.
It's about a dozen.
About a dozen. That's cool.
Actual designers, and then there's a whole team of art directors. There's teams of engineers. There's teams of electronic engineers and copywriters. But actual designers is about a dozen.
Hmm. How many people in that branch? Like in your office, how many people from a day-to-day basis?
I'm not sure. There's probably
in R&D, I would say about 90, you think, Rob?
Maybe 90 or 100 in R&D, and maybe another 200 when you include sales, marketing, administration, purchasing, accounts receivable. It's kind of deceiving because we are also, our office is attached to the factory where all the games are made, and there's several thousand people who work there. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to. The answer is that I don't have a clear answer.
I understand.
I was trying to wonder if it was like a big thing or small.
It's probably about 300 people who work in the office part and another 2,000 who work in the factory.
Huh. Interesting.
So you guys can walk down to the factory and check out
The
game being produced off the line, huh?
That's always a very satisfying feeling if you've worked on a game and you're really happy with it, to be able to literally grab the first one off the line.
That's cool.
So did you do that with HeroScape then or not?
HeroScape didn't actually come off our line here. That was, I think most or all of it came in from our Far East factory. Mm. So
that makes sense.
That one didn't actually come off a line where you could grab it, but it did come to our desk.
Now, who was responsible for the how you packed that thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's a work of genius right there.
Craig, who did that?
That would be me, I think. I'll field that question.
Wow, he's a genius.
Did you figure out how to pack that all
in
there?
I figured out how to pack that in there. The repack is the...
The repack is the issue.
That's the thing that takes some time.
Just throw out the box and pull out your Tupperware.
Yeah, actually, I went.
Well,
I
we try, you know, we try and pack the product with value, and we try and deliver as much as we can. And sometimes, you know, the repack, it's not as well thought out as we would hope it to be. So you can repack it, but you know, you have to follow some diagrams to repack it. It seems
takes a little bit of.
I actually saw
if you throw away the vac form, it fits. It fits. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem is
the plastic.
People try and put the figures back in the little plastic case that holds the figures.
Yeah.
If you just chuck that, you can fit it back in the box.
Yeah, I actually threw away the box. I'm sorry. I went to Target, bought a couple of those plastic hoppers.
There you go.
Buy a big hopper.
And once you buy more, you know, Wave 1 boosters and terrain and stuff like that, you're going to want to...
No. I don't like the game that much. Just because I bought two sets at full retail doesn't mean I like it.
Well, thank you for buying it.
Yes.
Now, do you guys work off a royalty basis?
No, we do
as
not.
As designers, no?
Nope.
No?
We are...
bonuses if it does a good job or anything like that?
I think you said no.
Royalties is different than bonuses.
Now, the inventor community is a royalty-based community.
Right.
But the issue with royalty-based communities is if you don't sell anything, you're not making money. The internal designers, like us and everyone who works there internally, are just regular, normal employees with no ownership of a game.
Doing it for the sake of doing it, for seeing the job.
I'm just comparing it to the video game business, where some people get bonuses, and if the game is a big mega hit.
No, but that's a good idea.
Hey, I think you should bring it up at the next peer review.
If you need a memo, we can write it for you.
Thank you. I'll send that right over to you.
Okay. So, tell them the guys from Board Game Geeks think you guys need to get paid more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure that'll work.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll listen to us.
Make sure you tell them where we're from, too. That's really important, because everybody's heard of us.
Absolutely.
Right.
I know a lot of our game designers use BoardGameGeek.
Yeah, I'm curious. Do you guys use it as a resource to ask questions?
Sure.
I mean, there's just no way I can follow every little thing that goes on there these days. It's
Even for, like, silly games that, not silly games, but games that, like, your site tends to focus more, and correct me if I'm wrong, more on, like, German games that are played. Rob and I play those a lot. We look forward to the new batch of German games that come out. But even for a game like a game I worked on was like Powerpuff Girls, when Mojo Jojo Attacks Townsville. I mean, you guys got reviews on that on there too, so it's a lot of fun because it encompasses all games.
Yeah, I mean, it originally started out as German games because that's what Dirk and I were really into.
Yeah,
but it's grown to every game.
Yeah, there's got to be at least 80 different versions of Monopoly on that thing.
At least.
Actually, I think there is something like that, because I was looking for...
And that's my decision, by the way.
Yeah. So, I was looking for something about some Monopoly game last week, and I just did a search for Monopoly, and I was like, oh, my goodness. So yeah.
I don't know why.
I know why.
What?
Because the marketplace. That's why you...
No. It has nothing to do with the marketplace.
Yes, it does.
I just thought it was cool to have, like, 100 versions of the thing on there and see all the pictures.
All right. That's for the marketplace.
Yeah.
I mostly use the site just to inflate ratings of games I've worked on.
That's a good good idea.
At least you admit it.
I have like 15 or 20 different aliases, and I just sign in and go through. And
wow. That's
pretty much my day at work.
Cool. This is Geek Speak Exposé. That's what this is, man. This is cutting edge here, all right? You've heard it here, folks, first. Something.
If you look at some of the games I've worked on, that's clearly not true.
Yeah, I was just...
There's...
So should we go into the background a little bit?
Yeah, go into your... So, who wants to
Craig,
start?
Craig, why don't you start? Because Rob keeps talking.
Well, I graduated with a bachelor's in illustration from University of Arts. That was like, 12 years ago. And then I was on my own for 2 years. I did a little bit of freelance game design. I met up with a rep in New York. I was showing him games, and I was showing him like hobby type games, more like Avalon Hill esque type games. And he informed me that if you design, simpler games for younger kids, you can make a lot more money. So that seemed. I started, designing. I got together maybe like 10 to 12 games together, and they were, out at different game companies all over the world. And I thought I was, it was going great. And then 2 years after I graduated college, I heard about an opening at Milton Bradley, so I filled my car with games, and they liked what they saw, and I got the job. That's the short story.
Did you grow up?
I've been there for 10 years. It's been great.
Have you been there? Is this your only job, first and only job?
Yeah, I've done, I did some freelance illustration work, but it's certainly my first and only 8-to-5 job.
Okay. Did you grow up playing games in your family?
Oh, yeah. I played, you name it, computer games, board games, role-playing, sports, any type of gaming, card games, anything and everything.
And you went, when you went to school, continued on and just stayed with you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. My family plays a lot of games and a lot of cards, but, myself and my brother, we always played the... We grew up on Avalon Hill and the Game Master games, pretty much. Okay. Which, you know, Shogun and Axis and Allies and...
Conquest.
Monfort
yeah,
America,
yeah.
Blood
I mean,
Mike games.
That's great Fortress for, like, America. When you're a teenager.
Yeah, those were fun.
I mean, even now, they're great. Axis and Allies, it's a classic.
So when you say you packed up your games, do you mean your, like, personal collection, or did you, like,
No, my, yeah, my personal collection. I was working with a group of guys. We kind of, you know, one of them was my brother, and we kind of, like, got together, and we, you know, got our games together. Because we were all doing other stuff at the same time. And that's sort of like what I brought to Milton Bradley, or that is what I brought to Milton Bradley, was the games that we worked on.
Okay.
None of those games actually took off for me at this point. Yeah. So, I mean, the inventor community, it's, you know, there's only X amount of games or board games or games in general that get taken right. out of X amount of submissions. And, you know, you really, I mean, I was right out of college, I mean, right out of college trying to come up with games. But it's, you know, it's tough out there.
How many games do you think you guys take?
Total?
Yeah. Like you said, 10% get through, but...
Well, 10, yeah.
10% of the whole...
10% of the vague ideas.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't even... You know, I don't know about 10% of the vague ideas. We have brainstorms all the time.
Mm-hmm. I have a vague idea every couple minutes, and Craig makes fun of me.
That's not necessarily bad. Yeah.
It's a very small number, the percentage that we take. I mean, it's something like 1% of games that we see or hear in some form make it on the shelf.
It's hard for us to even answer that question because,
really
there's an inventor, there's a person in charge of inventor relations, and they weed through hundreds of games before they get to the ones that they bring to us. You know what I mean? So
sure.
it probably is.
How about this? How many games coming out of your factory every year?
They can't answer that.
Doesn't know.
Okay, actually,
too many.
I have
how
a
many
question.
New product
yeah,
games?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
New games is our division make a year.
Yeah.
Bradley Parker Brothers and Tiger. I don't know. I think
50?
60? 50? Yeah, probably 60? 40. 50.
Okay. Just curious.
Actually, I find it interesting that you guys are using the word inventor instead of designer, because you guys are board game designers or game designers?
We're game designers. Yeah. This isn't to say that we don't invent our own games.
Sure. But you actually have inventors, which are a slightly different breed of people, apparently.
They are. They come up with the game idea to various states of completion and pitch it to our inventor relations people who bring them in, and it goes through several rounds, and if it becomes part of our line or tries to become part of our line, they would get a royalty from it, but then their work is done for the most part. Some inventors are more hands-on, some are more hands-off, but then it gets turned over to someone like Craig or me to do the other parts of the job I was talking about, which is, well, what can we afford to put in here? What's the size of all the pieces? Writing and refining the rules, trying to, make it so it's compatible for our manufacturing process, play testing it, double play testing, make sure it works with 3, make sure it works with 4 players, those sorts of things.
So you guys are really almost like board game developers, really.
Yeah, a lot of our job is development.
Yeah. Interesting.
I had one more question for Craig.
Sorry.
Do you remember what your first design was? Game design?
My first game design at Milton Bradley Parker Brothers?
Or just in general?
Well,
forever?
Yeah. I'm probably not at liberty to share the games that I'm currently, under exclusive, games that I worked on prior to Milton Bradley Parker Brothers. But my first game was Goosebumps Terror in the Graveyard. Are you guys familiar with that one?
No, I know the Goosebumps, though.
I didn't expect you to be.
That's like is that a Nickelodeon thing?
No.
That was a Scholastic, but that Goosebumps was very hot. It sold over 1 million copies in the U.S., and that was a lot of fun. It actually, I had a game path that changed on the, I managed to work in some really neat mechanics into a Goosebumps game that was, you know, all about going through a graveyard. But I had the board changed so that you didn't know. Sometimes a scary hand, a picture of a hand would come up under you that would lock you down, and then you had to move stuff. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
interesting.
Should we switch over to
Rob? See what kind of background Rob has.
Background.
Yeah.
Let's see. I wasn't quite as focused as Craig in getting into the game business. I graduated around the same time, actually the exact same time, back in 92. But I had a degree in classical civilizations and medieval history, which really wasn't a career degree. So I got a job as an advertising copywriter, which I did for 5 years.
Yeah.
But
classical,
my heart really wasn't in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at one point I pitched some articles to Dragon Magazine, and they liked one of my article ideas. So I wrote an article for them back in 98, and I got more satisfaction out of that one article than anything I had done in advertising, which made me realize that perhaps I was in the wrong industry. So I wanted to get into the game industry somehow, some way. I wasn't sure. I thought I might be doing some freelance, thought I might be doing some independent inventing. At the time, I was thinking I was going to be more in the role-playing industry because I think it was a little easier to do freelance writing there. But then there was an opening at Parker Brothers and Milton Bradley, and they wanted someone who, as it turns out, was really right place, right time. They wanted someone who had game design experience and desire, but who also had writing experience to work on the adult games, the party games, such as Trivial Pursuit and Scattergories and Taboo and Outburst. So I happened to fit the bill there, and I got very lucky because the person who was interviewing me asked me what a couple of my favorite childhood games were, and I managed to name, just by accident, two games that he had designed. So
suck up.
Man,
nope.
He's such
but
a
I didn't
suck.
Know.
Oh, whatever. You're from the advertising world. Don't give us that.
So I've been there for 6 years now. Mm. Back in 98. Mm. And I do spend quite a bit of my time. Craig spends more time on licensed games, and I do spend a lot of my time on our adult game line. I've done either all or no. I think there's maybe one or two Trivial Pursuits I haven't done. But over the past 6 years, I think I've worked on all of the Trivial Pursuit games.
So are you responsible for Electronic Taboo then?
Oh yeah.
Which one
was
that?
Like the silver
question.
The platinum version.
Oh, the
electronic thing.
Right. No, we weren't directly responsible. It was in our building.
Oh.
But we weren't the people who worked on that.
Damn. That would have been nice because I would have actually thanked you for that. That's a good game.
They can pass it on.
Well, no, they can't.
I can.
I
think I'm going to work tomorrow.
We know the guy that worked on that.
Oh, okay. Well, then give him a pat on the back. I love that game. That's a great game. The rest of them were not so much, but that one was really good.
All right. We'll tell him.
When you were you playing games as you growed up?
Growed up.
As we're grown up? When you were all grown up?
Yeah. I mean, gaming's always been a hobby and always been a passion. I played a ton of role-playing games as a kid, and mostly was the, you know, the DM or the game master, which, because I, you know, I had to design the game in my own head. And so I was playing a lot of board games, a lot of role-playing games. Got out of it a little bit in high school and college, but then right after college, got right back into it and had a gaming group, and I was playing kind of once a week with different groups of people. Mm. So I never really stopped playing games or thinking about games. I did have a board game family. I mean, what we did Christmas morning is everyone gave each other board games, and then we spent the rest of Christmas playing them, which
awesome.
We'll yeah. probably still do.
That's a cool
in a couple
idea.
Weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
at least
Hasbro
you
got one
day
to back that up.
One day a year that you could play board games.
That's a pretty cool idea, though.
Yeah. It's pretty common.
Is it? Yeah. I never heard of it before.
Yeah, we do. Oh. My family doesn't even do much in the way of gaming, actually, but yeah, we do.
So. Do you remember what your first design was?
Yeah, I got two games my first day at work. One was a remake of the game Scruples, because this was during the Clinton impeachment hearings over Monica Lewinsky. So we thought putting Scruples out again would be a nice fit.
Wow.
So I had to look at that game and figure out how to update it and look at the different cards and the questions. I don't know if you remember the game, but it's a game about asking very awkward questions about people. So as a new guy at work, it was great fun to play test that with rooms full of people I didn't know and have to ask them all sorts of embarrassing
questions, right? They're pretty personal, right?
What's that?
Personal, pretty personal questions.
Very personal questions. Questions about adultery and all sorts of very...
I would think the PC police would have come down on you on that one. I mean, Hasbro, being, I mean, don't they have to send you through courses for being politically correct and all that? And how do you do that and play test scruples all at the same time?
Well, you know, it was fun not knowing people and having to ask them that. you know, everyone knew what they were getting into when you're playtesting scruples. And that was one of the things I tried to put in the game, was a way for the questions to be a little tamer, or for ways in the gameplay itself for people to beg off some of the questions that, quite honestly, no one wanted to answer for that particular group, you know, who was playing. And the other game I had was Monopoly Looney Tunes. So I spent my my first couple weeks at work asking strangers awkward questions and then watching old Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Well, that ain't too bad.
No, that was fine. I could handle that as a you know, day-to-day job.
Yeah. So, let's see here. Was that when the Golden Collections kit still came out? No, that was a long time ago. Never mind.
That was before. You were probably watching Laserdiscs.
No, I was watching videotapes.
Videotapes? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I remember there was a Looney Tunes on Laserdisc
Old
collection.
School, man. Old school.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so let's move on. We've got a ton of user questions, so we're going to let that dictate the flow.
I have nowhere
here
to start. So let me start here.
Start out the first one right there.
Geekspeak. I mean, it's not like we have anything better to do.
Oops.
Yeah, that wasn't a mistake. That was planned. That was one of our public service announcements.
Yes, this is Scott DiBartolo from Modesto, California, or Man of War Player, as you may know me on The Geek. And first off, I'd like to thank Aldi and Dirk for the great job that they do at Board Game Geek. And my question for Rob and Craig, actually I have two questions. First, are there any plans to make an expansion for Cosmic Encounter, like two more players or more aliens or rule changes or things like that? And the second question would be, is Hasbro ever going to redo Wooden Ships and Iron Men? You guys have a great time, and thanks for doing GeekSpeak.
They're going to punt on this one.
Did you guys hear that?
It's Paul.
No, we heard it. That's fine. Yeah. Greg, you want me to take it, or you want it?
Well, that's certainly a question that would be for Wizards of the Coast, I would think, because they're handling the Avalon Hill line right now. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't feel comfortable giving an answer on, you know, Wooden Ships and Iron Men, because we don't know whether they're looking at that or not, or we don't know whether they're going to continue with the Cosmic Encounter or not.
Hmm. Okay.
Uh-oh. So we're just not going to have a problem with this, are we?
No, we got some other questions here.
Yeah, I know, but aren't they almost all, like, Avalon Hill related?
No.
All right. Yeah, actually, I was never a big fan of the Avalon Hill remake of Cosmic Encounter. I played a lot of the Mayfair version, which I thought was really good, but it wasn't all that terribly good.
What didn't you like about it?
It was missing flares, I think, is what it was missing. The card play was significantly more lackluster than I remember, and that's even in comparison, like, to the original Eon version was supposed to be just, like, crazy with all the cards that came out and permanent cards and stuff like that. But
right, I can tell you what we were thinking at the time. That's some years ago. We were trying to simplify Avalon Hill a little bit and come out with games that were, you know, for younger kids, meaning like your 12 to 14-year-old. So we came out with games like Battlecry and Queen's Gambit, and, you know, we chose a choir to, you know, give a new look. And Cosmic Encounter is one game that we picked up that's, you know, had some history and is a great playing game, and I think we simplified it a little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, the rules, I don't think the rules changed any, but no. We did go back to the original release of the game, mm-hmm, before any of the expansions.
Yeah, well, before...
Simplified,
you mean,
meaning no flares, not...
Right,
you know,
it was back to the...
powers.
It's right. Simplified, right.
It was back to the first release.
The flares were more or less like edict cards, at least in the Mayfair version. I've only ever seen the Aeon. I never actually played the Aeon version, but the flares were nice little, like, edict cards that came out that didn't really... there was a lot of them, so it gave the game a lot more of a flavor or whatever. So, I don't know, it was interesting.
Well, let me blow through these other cosmic questions real quick, because there may be a nugget in there, and I just want to get them out of the way. And...
Yeah. We're really prepared.
Hi, this is Randy Peek from Preston, Connecticut. My question is about the fate of Cosmic Encounter, my favorite game of all time. The game was turned over to Wizards of the Coast, from what I understand, for further development, and since then, absolutely nothing has happened with it. So I was wondering, are there going to be any expansions for it, or is the game effectively dead?
You probably can't answer that.
Well, we don't know what their plans are with the game. I mean, right. If I knew and knew concretely and was allowed to talk about it and everything, I'd be happy to do so. But, yeah, it's one of those things that I don't want to start answering for other divisions of the company.
What if we asked you again? Or rather, what
if...
Have a different caller ask
What if a different caller asked you the same question? Only he used different words.
This is a two-part question.
Uh-huh.
But half of it is cosmic related. So we'll see if the first half has anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
I summarized these questions, but I can't remember what they are now. I wrote the titles out.
I apologize for my partner's drug habit.
Tom Vassell from Korea here.
Oh,
I have two questions. The first is regarding Avalon Hill and regular Hasbro. Do the same design teams work on each, and how do you decide, when a new game, which way does it go? Because Battle Ball, HeroScape could have been possibly introduced underneath the Avalon Hill line, and I'm curious as to what the determination is where each game goes. My second question is, will we see an expansion for Cosmic Encounter?
All right, I'll just next.
Or Cosmic Encounter.
Yeah, so that's Tom.
That's Tom. Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised he had time to call.
He calls every week.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I was thinking every day he's written another lengthy review. I don't have time to read them. I don't know how he has time to write them.
Is Rob giving Tom shit?
I think he's giving Tom shit.
I am not.
No,
I'm actually,
you know what, Rob? It's all right.
That he can play and evaluate that many games.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't evaluate them. He just writes about them.
Now who's giving who?
Yeah, but I've got a history of doing that. Every show that Tom calls in and we play his call, I got to give him crap about it. But all right, so what
I
was
guess
the
first
question?
Half? Yeah. Well, how does a game get determined? Where mm-hmm. does it go to the Avalon team or you guys? Or
well, the issue is that there isn't one. Because we're 3,500 miles apart, there isn't one sort of overseeing department that gets all the games and then decides which way they go, east or west. Each division has its own inventor relations, and each division has its own design and development teams. And we kind of know where we both play. And occasionally, like I said, sometimes it gets slightly overlapped where they do something that could conceivably be something we do, and we do something conceivably be for them. But 95% of our stuff is for different audiences and different stores and different distribution. In the case of Battle Ball and HeroScape, those were games that originated in our building, and so it wasn't like we were keeping them or anything like that. It's just ideas that started there, so they just stayed there sort of by default.
And really the goal with HeroScape was to create a game, a simplified miniatures game, that would appeal to kids and gamers as well. I mean, we definitely wanted to have a hit in both areas, much like... how HeroQuest was a simplified role-playing game for the mass market. That was very much our thinking going into the development of HeroScape.
Well, I give you guys serious points for HeroScape. That's some really good stuff there. I mean, the rules themselves are okay and all that, and I like the painted miniatures, which everybody's all fawning over, but frankly, I want to know who came up with the interlocking terrain.
That's Stephen Baker.
Really?
We both report to him. He's the he came up. He's HeroQuest and Battlemaster, so I mean he's a great guy to report to. Mm-hmm. I've learned a ton from him, and I'm sure Rob will say the same thing.
Absolutely.
And we all worked on the engine together, and it was very much a collaborative effort. But as far as coming up with what would be cool for miniatures for the masses, I mean that was definitely Baker's idea, the interlocking tiles, and we jumped on it. As soon as we got some prototype molds together, we were like, oh, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I mean, I know that was when I first bought it and we brought it over here to Aldi's and we set it up, I was just flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the pieces looked okay, but then the fact that they actually locked together meant that you could set up your board like that and drag it halfway across the table and it wouldn't just fall apart.
Yeah, and it's an event too. You know, it's an event game. You put that down on the table and it looks like another world.
Have you guys seen some of the pictures posted up on the Board Game Geek?
Of the crazy
terrains?
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, that's great, because the hard part about that game is, you know, you sit there and you're writing the rules and you go, yeah, well, you know, I'd lean over the table. How would someone build something like this? And Craig would go, why would someone build something like that? I said, well, they will, and we need a rule for it. And I'm sure we didn't get them all, but we really tried to think of every way you could put those pieces together. Mm-hmm. And,
I guess there's all that, too.
And at the same time, we really wanted to keep the rules, clean and simple and, you know, not go into every possible nuance that could happen.
Yeah.
No, I thought you guys did a good job of that. The only real thought that the only thing I really had a problem with was the line of sight stuff, which is good because that stuff can get real complicated real quick. But
you don't like that it's just we get rid of all partial cover and things, or do you actually not like looking behind someone's head?
No, actually, I like that. I thought the rules should have been a little bit more explicit about that, but I liked it on the whole.
We have a rules question.
We did?
Can Sergeant Drake dodge, what's his name, the dragon's fire?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the dragon's, Sergeant.
Go ahead.
It specifically says normal attack on Sergeant Drake.
I'm always right.
So he is affected by Deathwalker's, you know, Deathwalker 9000's explosion attack and Mimring's.
Mimring's fire.
Yep.
Yeah. And the grenade.
And the grenades.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's not all that?
I'm right.
He ain't all that?
I am
all
right. Dude.
He is pretty good, though.
I did come up with a good question off the top of my head. Are you guys going to be doing a Cosmic Encounter Monopoly?
Monopoly? Onto something.
Oh,
Monopoly.
Rob, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah. Because I'm really dying to know.
We'll look into it.
Oh, okay.
Put on the back burner.
Can I get credit for it when it comes to light? Because I think that's a really good idea.
Hey, greets to Aldi and Dirk. This is Clinton Paris, Board Game Geek member in Spokane, Washington.
Spokane.
Question for Dave and Craig, or I'm sorry, Rob and Craig. HeroScape, well received by the gamers. How is it being received internally at Hasbro? What do they think of it? Are they going to keep it going? We love it. Later.
Clinton Paris.
Something like that.
From Spokane. Spokane.
Well, that's always good to hear.
Yeah.
That's so, I'm going to throw this one your way, because you're officially HeroScape.
We can't really talk about sales for the game itself.
Sure.
But it's certainly got a good response from the mass market and the gamer crowd. So we're looking at many things for the future for HeroScape right now.
Hmm. So I myself would be much more curious, like, to see whether or not I appreciate how the gamer market is just so inconsequential as to be inconsequential. But I mean the mass market. I mean, have they enjoyed it? Has it been selling pretty good, or is it just all of us going to Toys R Us and buying it at discounts and stuff like that?
Well, we won't really know for about another month.
Really?
This is the big buying season.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Christmas.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's
true. Most of the mass market buy, you know, games now as gifts for children or brothers and sisters. So this is the big time, so you have to wait for the dust to settle in January.
Okay. We hope you guys do well, actually. We'd really like to see more of that kind of thing coming on. But
we're hoping.
We tried. I tried. Like I said, I bought two at full retail. So.
Oh, see?
Thanks.
Yeah. Gamer community is very consequential.
That's right.
No, that's not true. But all right. Are we going to go again?
I think there's another HeroScape question.
What about Axies and Allies as a Monopoly tie-in?
How about Axies and Allies Cosmic Encounter?
Yeah.
Oh, we have better space tanks.
Yeah, that'd be cool, man. I want.
Hi, this is Robert Kalagian from Torrington, Connecticut. Question for Rob and Craig from Hasbro about HeroScape, actually. Just wondering how well HeroScape has been doing since its release and what we might expect in the future with HeroScape, if there's going to be added boosters, terrains, maybe added master sets. Great job, guys. Thanks a lot.
Well, we know there's boosters.
What about a Cosmic Encounter HeroScape?
Oh.
Then you can have, like, the Filch going against Sergeant Drake.
There you go.
All right.
The hardest part about that Cosmic Encounter would be sculpting the figures.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The Void.
The Void?
Yeah. The Void.
All right, should we just skip that question?
I don't know.
There's really nothing else out.
Well, they can't tell us anything that they haven't already said.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has been a really good show so far. I've been really impressed with how prepared Aldi's been.
Horrible today.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you, as far as HeroScape boosters and waves, I mean, if it continues to be a success, we're playtesting all sorts of things, and it's probably everything that, you know, all the gamers and all the kids were thinking that we're playtesting, which would be like, you know, trees, bridges, snow, lava.
Hot lava, death.
You know, anything and everything. Towers.
What the hell was that?
You know, giant castles. I mean,
that was my inner 12-year-old.
You know, anything that your imagination could come up with, we are looking at putting into HeroScape.
Is there a chick on the line somewhere? Jeez, what was that?
That was me getting excited about the lava.
Hot lava, death.
But nothing's official yet.
Of course not. No, we can't actually talk about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
This one's interesting.
Yeah, sure, whatever, dude.
Hello, this is Chris Schreiber calling from the Arkansas School for Math, Science, and the Arts, and I have two questions for Rob and Craig. First, I can understand not putting an author's name on a toy or doll, but it really seems like a nice touch on a board game. What prevents Hasbro from putting the author's name on the front of a board game? And my final question is...
I'll let you answer that one. I'll pause him.
All right. Want me to go, Craig?
Yeah, you take this.
All right. Partly it's tradition that the Parker Brothers and Milton Bradley haven't put designers or authors' names on the games. And also, I think the other thing is that it's a much muddier path of who sort of is the parent of a game at our company, because it comes in from an inventor, and an inventor might be an inventing house of eight people who all worked on it, and then it might go through two or three designers and some copywriters and engineers and everything at our end. And really, when you get to the, you know, game on the shelf, it could have conceivably 15 different names of people who could all say in one way or another that they were the author of the game or made a significant contribution. So I think it's just really a different sort of system with a lot of hands on there that prevents it from doing it.
A lot different from the Euro type stuff where it's usually just one guy.
Well, you're never going to get Alan Moon like that, because he's got to put his name on it.
Prima donna.
Prima donna. These designers,
right.
I tell you
all
what.
All right, second part.
Is how come the slogan "Making the World Smile" is only used on your international web pages? Thank you very much.
I had no idea.
I had no idea.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Well, Hasbro International is like different, or like Hasbro Europe is completely different than Hasbro Domestic, right?
I mean, yeah, that's a whole separate division over there, and
so
that's
their
division.
Marketing team that came up with that slogan, probably.
I mean, I know the slogan from working there, so I just assumed it was used domestically, but maybe it isn't.
Well, you do have a smiley face on your logo.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. Who came up with that idea?
I don't know. It was there when I got there.
Ah, you guys, I tell you what. Do you know anything? How about like a Cosmic Encounter Wanna Be a Millionaire?
Huh? With hot lava.
With hot lava.
No, no. Magma. Liquid no. Hot magma.
You got to do it in a little woman's voice. Now, come on, Rob.
I remember what I said. Hot liquid lava? What did I say?
Hot
boiling?
Hot lava death.
With hot lava death, I think it was.
Yes. Something
that's
like
our
that.
New promo.
Yeah,
hot
okay.
Lava death.
Okay. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Tyler Tinsley, Portland, Oregon, and I have three questions for the Hasbro designers. What do you think are the stylistic differences between American and German games, and how have German games influenced American games?
I'll pause them.
Okay. That was two?
That was one.
I think that was one.
That was one. Okay.
Well, actually, first of all, I think you guys mentioned before we really got started that you guys both play what we refer to as German games quite a bit, yes?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We get together outside of work to play games, usually about once a week, maybe three times a month, something like that. And what we're mostly playing are German games mm-hmm. at that point.
So you guys have like 200-300 games each, or what? What's your collections look like?
Yeah, mine's probably like 500 to 600.
Yeah, I probably have 300 games, something like that.
It's, I mean, the German games are the Euro games. I mean, they come out with a variety of different new board games every year, and they always have some cool like new mechanic or some new twist on some new mechanic, and they're a good resource, and I think. Anybody who's a game designer should, you know, constantly keep up with what's new and what's fresh and in game mechanics, and that's a good source for it.
I won't disagree with that. One of the things that's always very heart-rending about trying out independent game designs, a lot of times, you know, they'll send you an email and say, "Hey, I designed this really great game. I really like it. I think you should try it." And I was thinking, well, have you played a couple of games lately? Because they can be, you know...
A little different.
Yeah, I mean, roll and move, that kind of stuff. No, I mean, you know, play 30, 40, 50, 100 games and see what kind of thing you learn. And then maybe you might not consider maybe putting your life savings behind a game, but maybe not before.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue.
Well, no, they didn't actually talk about it. So, I mean, do you guys try to incorporate some of the stuff that you see in these German games or not?
It's more of like what the difference is.
I think it shows up here and there in various places. I don't remember what, but I remember there was some little bits in the Game of Life, A Jedi's Path, that I worked on that I remember there was something like, oh, that kind of feels like something that I, you know, feels like something you get out of a Euro game. I remember
And there's certainly some elements in 2210 that have, Euro-type mechanics to them. Victory points, first, you know, cards that grant you victory points, or it's tough to put a specific mechanic to it.
Doesn't your Roller Coaster Tycoon had some auctions and some blind bidding and things like that, which is...
Yeah, Roller Coaster Tycoon definitely has some Euro influence. I mean, even when we were working on the HeroScape, the order markers was the one thing that we thought was kind of, you know, sort of planning ahead. You know, you had to think about it. It wasn't just like you just take your turn.
Right.
That was something that
and you had
I
one
would
that you
say
could
is sort
with.
Of Euro-esque, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. That's most definitely something.
It rubs off.
Yeah. Do you feel that it has any negative impact?
Which
on
part?
Our games or game design?
Just game design in general. I mean, German, you know, German games, we keep talking about them. I mean, sure, they're nice. I mean, they're great. I like them. But they do have a limited shelf life. They don't really have, you know, they don't have a ton of replayability. But, I mean, I suppose these are all qualities that you don't necessarily mind because you're designing for more of a mainstream market.
Well, I mean, my only personal... I don't want to call it a drawback. That's too strong a word. But I'm a guy who's a sucker for theme and story. And sometimes the German games can feel a little dry just on my, you know, just when I'm playing the games. I admire them. I like them. But sometimes they feel like the theme was definitely a secondary thought. And as a guy who has a strong role-playing background, I tend to flip it and put theme and story first.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You and Tom would get along well then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this guy's got two more questions.
Okay, more questions.
Question two is, with games like Ticket to Ride and some of the Avalon Hill games making their way to the mass markets, will Hasbro bring more designer-style games to the mass market? And also a third question.
Okay.
Are you
going to any kind of management decision to kind of, hey, these gamers are a market, and maybe we should cater to them a little bit more?
It's really, I mean, it's kind of like the second half of the first question. I mean, the fact that you guys are actually playing the Euro games, the German games, means that
it's going to affect you.
It's going to affect them one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean, if the new games you guys are designing are a little bit more intelligent, or quote-unquote intelligent, then in theory it'll infiltrate.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, and it's not like the... I mean, we did Quandary, which was a Reiner game a while back. It's not like we haven't tried some of those games.
Who did Daytona 500?
In the mass market.
Is that Kramer?
It was Kramer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Quandary?
No, Daytona 500 was, I think.
Oh, yeah, and Daytona 500 as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. There's discussions. We go back and forth, and there's, you know, nothing. And the short answer to the question is there's nothing definitive I've heard. I can't turn around and say, yes, we're having a whole, you know, Euro line that's coming out next year, but it's not off the radar, and it's something that's discussed at various points in different ways. How to really find the American audience that wants those games is really the issue.
Well, I mean, you guys are faced with, you're faced with a very serious problem purely from a marketing standpoint. I mean, it's extremely difficult, and frustrating for me, maybe, I guess, but... When I go to Target or some one of your mass market places and you see some lady walking down the toy or the board game aisle and she's picking up backgammon and like Lord of the Rings, the chess set, and you're like, okay, lady, there are other choices. I mean, you could look. I mean, there's other stuff there, but it's a hell of a juggernaut that you guys are facing in terms of just what the populace actually expects.
Well, I think that the board, you know, people who say that they like playing games and board games is just a very wide pool of people, and they all have very different tastes. It's, you know, sort of like people who say they like music, but if you get five people in the room together, they probably don't like the same type of music. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to lose sight of that it's a big world for board gaming, and there's room for a lot of different types of games in there. And we're always just trying to get more people to play games or people to play games more often. And so we want them to play the games they like. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, some people say, well, that's not a good game or I don't like that game. They're happy. They're playing a game, so that's what we like.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, for instance, one of the things that the caller brought up was Ticket to Ride. I mean, one of the questions that we've had before was what would happen if everybody... if we were able to take our magic wand and the game of Monopoly that they played as a kid was actually replaced with the game of Ticket to Ride, would the world be a better place or not?
I don't know. I really don't. Bill. You know, Monopoly gets...
Dark.
I'm sorry.
Going to say Monopoly gets kind of short shrift among the gaming circles.
I'm not trying to be pejorative.
Fine. It's an easy target. There's when you step back and look at it, and I was talking about this with Craig today, there's, you know, more going on there than I think a lot of people give it credit for. I think its biggest problem is its success and its ubiquitousness. Yeah. I mean, it's everywhere, so it's the easiest target to pick on. But there's some negotiation, and there's some trading, and there's some planning ahead, and there's some... you know, strategy and different strategies to employ. I mean, there's a lot of luck about how you go around the board and how things play out, but there's more there than I think
people...
And
it's fun, and it's fun for kids. I mean...
Yeah, but the thing is...
It's so long.
Like, the movie... Well, here's what I was thinking. It's like...
It's an hour and a half.
The movie industry doesn't make the same movie every year.
They don't?
Do they? Or they just kind of rehash it?
I think he's got you there, dude.
Did he get me? Well, if they did, they wouldn't make that much money.
Okay. This coming from the freaking game, computer game
Monopoly
world.
Monopoly has not changed in how many years?
Yeah, but I'm sure the new Doom or the new Half-Life is completely different than anything before it.
I'm supposed to back me up.
I'm not going to back you up on this one. I'm sorry. I think he's got a point.
All right.
Do we have another question from Tom?
No.
Are there a few really good personal projects that you, Hasbro, boys have in the works, but they just don't have the Hasbro market. And do you ever see yourselves being published by other publishers? I want to say you guys did a really awesome job on Heroescape, and that's all. Bye.
He said there was three questions. That was four.
That was like six.
Yeah, maybe six.
But what was the first part of that? I missed that.
Aldi was talking. I don't remember.
He said, do we have any projects
personal projects.
Personal projects that we never see the light of day. Yes, we couldn't talk about them, but also, we kind of design things. We try to design things that have a chance. You know, I mean, I could probably design something that I knew would never, ever be published, but that would not be the best use of my time. And what was this?
Right, and as long as we work for Hasbro, everything that we come up with is, you know, Hasbro owns it.
That's right. That's it.
It's not like we could go elsewhere. And, you know, right. Hasbro's great. I mean, Heroescape was a great project, and, you know, it continues to be a great project that we're working on. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's fun to go to work every day. How many people can say that?
Not all day.
So what about Hasbro? I mean, I've made comparisons from Hasbro to, like, say, oh, I don't know, what other monolithic type of company out there that buys up little companies and spits them out? Let me think. Oh, yeah, Microsoft. Any thoughts on that?
Whoa.
Oh. Hey, this is Joe Stedman. I'm calling from South Korea. Some people call me a troll, but I'm really not.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got two questions. First question is, how do you respond to everyone calling you guys Hasborg? You know, as in Star Trek, the Borg. And the second question is more of a serious question. Now, how would someone go about getting one of the old titles from you guys? I know that over on some of the other forums I talk in, some of the old Avalon Hill titles, like, for instance, Turning Point Stalingrad, you guys hold the title to that or the rights to that game, and it doesn't seem that you're willing to release that. I mean, is there a certain way? How would you go about filing or asking for those kind of those old titles that some of us might want to rework or republish one day? Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right.
I love that guy's avatar, the gun with the tank. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
He's a manly man.
Yes. He's a war gamer. I'm giving you more time to think about your answers there, Rob.
No, that's fine. I laughed really hard the first time I heard Hasborg.
Yeah.
It really stopped being as funny, mostly through repetition.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that always cracks me up is when people will send me an email or send a post that they're asking me to respond to, and then they say, "Hey, Hasborg," and they ask a question, and then they wonder why I don't reply. And it's just sort of like, well, you know, if you want someone to respond to you, you don't start out with a negative. I don't really. Hasbro ended up buying a lot of companies before I started there, and certainly I'm not in the boardroom making decisions about mergers and purchases and things, so I can't really speak to that.
At what we did with Avalon Hill, I mean, we tried to make it a little. We tried to, like, bring the audience down a little bit and put out some more. Put out a bigger wow as far as, like, what you get in the game. And I think we put out some great games for Avalon Hill.
Mm-hmm. As for ownership of games, it's I don't really have an answer to that. I mean, I think at some point the ownership of the game goes back to the original inventor, unless they signed a contract where, you know, someone has it forever. But every contract would be different. A lot of those contracts probably came from Monarch Avalon Hill, and so everyone has its own story.
And that would be a question that, you know, someone from Wizards of the Coast could answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Still didn't answer that one first. No, I totally appreciate your point, Rob, with the, you know, don't want to be complete dick. But, I mean, it is interesting, though, that the dominance that Hasbro has in the marketplace. I mean, you know, if you guys wanted to pull all the copies of Monopoly off the shelf and replace them with something else, you could. I mean, and I certainly don't mean to hold you responsible personally. I mean, but it's always a question that we tend to ask ourselves, because, you know, there's a lot of really good games out there, and it's interesting that
that it is just purely a marketing choice.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Monopoly is purely a marketing choice?
Well, yeah.
I disagree.
Really?
I think Monopoly is a great game for kids and adults to have fun and learn about, you know, bargaining and buying property and paying rent, and it's a lot of fun.
I also think, you know, if Monopoly's on the shelf and you see it on the shelf year in and year out, it's because people are buying it.
Yeah.
So,
no, I won't deny that. That's, yeah.
It's really a type of thing that, you know, we as a, you know, as a company, we obviously want to make games that we're pretty sure people are going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not always right, and sometimes we're right on things that we thought we weren't going to be right on. But, but you know, when you look on the shelf, that's our guess based on past data and future guessing on what's going to sell, and the ones that are there year in and year out are selling.
Mm-hmm.
So if we took all the Monopolies off the shelf and replaced them with X, mm-hmm. Would they sell better than Monopoly? Not right
probably
away.
Not.
Probably not.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but I mean...
Well, the thing is... Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I play Monopoly, and I wholeheartedly agree that when I say the word Monopoly here, I'm really meaning, like, all of the games that tend to show up on the shelves of Target. I mean, Mancala, Chess, Backgammon. These are all okay games, but, I mean, frankly, we've all played games that are shorter, easier, and a lot more friendly to people. I mean, games that have a lot higher enjoyment level. I mean... And I wholeheartedly agree that one of the big things, and this is one of the things we've talked about in previous shows, was that everybody knows the rules to Monopoly, so they don't have to go through the rules, and that's like one of the like single biggest selling points of any game that most people already know the rules. But I mean, it's still kind of frustrating for us anyway. I mean, for people that we feel like we've not quote unquote seen the light. And I agree with you that there's a difference between, you know, like your gamer and your average populace, but still, I mean, you'd like to think that there's some hope of, I don't know, opening the world up a little bit more. I mean, Carcassonne, you can see some Settlers, you can see Ticket to Ride, you can see a lot of these games that have, I don't know, a lot higher enjoyment of, you know, interaction, and it's not just a question of sitting around waiting for other people to die off. Which is what Monopoly is. I mean, I'm sorry.
Monopoly is an elimination game.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. It's not nearly as long as most people play it if you play it by the rules.
Yeah.
It's about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying, and, you know, I like playing all sorts of different games, and it's really just an issue of people who want to play some types of games go to some stores, and people who want to play other types of games go to other stores, and mm-hmm. I don't think it necessarily has to be an either-or.
Mm-hmm.
And we've looked at, and we continue to look at the Euro games. I mean, and we continue to play the Euro games.
Oh, sure.
I mean, so it's,
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun for everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
I fully admit that it's, you know, that I'm highly prejudiced, and I fully know, I understand perfectly that it's a marketing choice. I mean, it's a pure, you know, your first responsibility is to your shareholders. Shareholders demand profits. Profits is basically putting out the thing that your marketing tests have shown you will sell 1 million, 2 million, 3 million units a year. I mean, I can't blame you for that. I'm just feel kind of frustrating because, you know, gamers tend to think all Nirvana-ish and all that.
No.
Utopia, sorry.
No, I mean, it's. I mean, I'm passionate about games, too, and I'm passionate about all sorts of different games, but it's just a different world to be in when you're looking at what games you want to play and what games he wants to play and what games this family wants to play. And, you know, you're just trying to make games for everyone to say, I had a good time, I played a game last night.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's what it comes down to.
Sure. Well, you guys have done extremely well. Let me give you a big props for handling my questions very well. Thank you.
No problem. I get it a lot.
I'm sure you do. I apologize.
All right. Moving on.
We're going to move on.
Hi, this is Paul Boos from Falls Church, Virginia. I was curious how they determine what games go into what markets. For example, I recently bought a copy of Sumo made by Hasbro, but I had to buy it from Australia. I've never seen it in the U.S. So I'm just curious how they determine which games are going in which markets. thanks, and thanks, and keep up all the good work. Bye.
Different companies, basically.
Yeah, it's different companies. That Sumo came out of Hasbro UK, and for those of you who haven't seen it, it's got one of my favorite box covers of all time. It's an extreme close-up on the back of a sumo wrestler. Not a picture, an illustration, but you still get the main effect across. Yeah, I mean, that was a game. It was a two-player game. It was part of a line of games that Hasbro UK was exploring, trying to do more games that played very quickly, like 20 minutes for two people, so for young couples or siblings or something like that.
Is that En Garde or Duel as we know it? Is it the same game or is it different?
I don't know, in all honesty. I played it once or twice, maybe 3 years ago. I mostly remember it for the cover.
Sounds very memorable.
So, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't a decision that said we're going to put it in Australia or Europe, but we're not going to put it here. It's that all the individual companies come up with their own games, and if something is a success, then the other divisions look at it and say, hey, what's that? So we're all sort of trying to develop our own things and then share the successes.
Really? So you guys, so I mean, the Hasbro Europe, Hasbro UK, Hasbro Domestic are completely, totally separate entities?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there are people up in senior management who watch all of these things and go back and forth and talk to each other, but down at the game designer level, they're separate companies. Sometimes we go over there or they come over here or we see what they're putting out or they play our games and go back and forth. I mean, a lot of the issues are it's hard for them to pick up our games because we put so much writing on all the boards and all the cards that they just have tremendous language and translation issues because we're not used to designing games, as you see in a lot of the Euro games, with symbols.
Yeah. Why is that? Just because you don't have language problems, so you don't really have to go there?
Yeah, usually it's easier to explain on a game with copy and with words than with a symbol. So if we're primarily designing for the American market, then we can make the game as easy to play for the American market, and sometimes that gets in the way of a translation. Sometimes it doesn't.
Actually, speaking of which, like, what is your... I mean, what is Hasbro's domestic, like, target demographic? I mean, is it, like, kids 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 or something like that, or... Or can you even answer that? I'm sorry.
No, I was thinking.
It's for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it goes down to
full range.
Goes down to preschool. Goes down to three kids, tween girls. You got the what we call our adult line, which is the party games.
Sure.
More notably, I guess we don't we Parker Brothers, Milton Bradley, and Tiger don't have as many games for I'd say late teens. But other than that, we're trying to hit all the other places, male, female, kids, adults, in various ways. Mostly families, mostly kids, though.
Can you guys comment on what percentage of the market you guys have? Like, just high-level stuff?
If I knew, I probably couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys have got, most of the market. I mean, again, go back to the Target example. You walk down the Target aisle. I mean, you guys own, three-quarters of the games that are in that aisle, right?
What's the competitors, Mattel?
There's more competitors than that.
Yeah, there are more game. There are more mass-market game designers than just Mattel, that's for sure.
You can definitely say we're the market leader. I think we have the largest share, but I don't know what those numbers are, and it's probably different from store to store and from region to region.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I assume that you guys have bought Cranium already.
No, Cranium's its own company.
All right, continuing on.
Yeah.
This is Mark Johnson. I'm the other guy compared to your guest last week. I'm calling from Santa Clarita, California, a little north of L.A. First of all, thanks to Ollie and Dirk for this show. I really enjoyed it. I usually listen to it on my commute into work. And I'm really pleased to have your guest on today, Robin Craig. Let's see, I have a couple questions for you. First is about the themes and maybe mechanics that are in mainstream American games or the directions you're trying to branch them out. A lot of the themes still seem to be, I guess for want of a better term, targeted toward 11-year-old boys sort of thing. And you look at a lot of the German games we've seen, and they have more mature themes. I wonder if you think the American market might move in that direction. And I think what might be related to that is that a lot of the German games with those mature themes have You know, they stand on the strength of some of their mechanics. And I see things like auctions being introduced into Roller Coaster Tycoon, so maybe you've got some thoughts about games moving in that that direction.
Well, that's like deja vu.
Something like that.
There we go. See, we weren't lying.
Yes, you weren't lying.
No. I never accused you of that.
Well, I guess we could just skip over most of it and say, do you think the games are moving more towards a German-esque kind of design?
I guess you're going to have everything.
Yeah, we've kind of covered it.
I mean, mostly because your designers, most of the designers I've talked to, there's a Mattel group that I talked to at the gathering, and you guys are clearly playing the German games in your own spare time. So, I mean, it's bound to affect them one way or the other.
Yeah.
Implicitly or explicitly. Although, we do need to talk about the 11-year-old boys.
No.
Oh, no?
Okay. The second question is about licenses. I wonder if Hasbro is thinking about maybe bringing over any particular good games from other places, other countries. Of course, we've seen other people like Rio Grande and Uberplay and Mayfair do that, but Parker Brothers, Milton Bradley, even Avalon Hill, they did that in their time too, and now that they're all under the Hasbro wing, I wonder if there's some thought to doing the same thing at that big corporate level. You can only imagine what a Hasbro Settlers or Carcassonne might have been like. All right, thanks. Bye.
Not sure if you can answer that.
I mean, I can't get into specifics, obviously, as to, you know, what games we've looked at or thought about or wanted to, and it didn't work for various other reasons. But, we have people from our inventor group who go over to Essen and look at games and talk to other game companies and talk to large and small, and we, you know, try to see what opportunity there is for, I guess I can call mainstream America the non-gamers, people who play games at a much more casual level than people who are on the phone right now and are listening to this right now.
That's all right. We're all geeks. We appreciate that. No, yeah, that's interesting, though. I mean, it was one of the things we talked about last week in regards to Mayfair. Their business model was to take, at least several years ago, was to take German games and bring them to the U.S. and then play them and then redesign them slightly and then re-release them, as opposed to just doing what we've, like, as what Mark was saying, the Rio Grande model, which is just bring them over and print them. I mean, that's it. Don't redevelop them or anything like that. So, I mean, obviously not in specifics, but I mean, you guys have not considered that at all?
I mean, there's been a number of German games that have been at work, either played, talked about briefly, talked about, you know, just people will play them and say, oh, that's fun. And we say, is there room in our line for it? And we just have various discussions about it. I mean, the thing is, all games are considered,
mm-hmm.
and it just goes through a lot of steps and a lot of people before the games get out there.
It does seem, though, that you guys are fairly centered on, like, developing a lot of your designs in-house, though. I mean, and for good or evil, I'm not really commenting one way or the other, but, I mean, it's good for you guys, obviously. I mean, you two personally, but...
We develop all our games in-house, but a lot of them come from the inventor communities.
Mm-hmm.
I would say about what percentage do you think the, non-licensed, we certainly do, most of our licensed games are designed by designers at Hasbro, but as far as like new introduction non-licensed games, I'd say, you know, I don't know what the correct percentage number is, but... it's pretty high on the inventor side.
Most come from the inventors.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's exactly what you were asking.
How you get the cream of the crop.
Sure. Like, can you give me just an example of what you're talking about there, then? Like, what's an inventor game? I mean, obviously, you know, Queen's Gambit.
Like Bop It.
Bop It. Okay. Okay.
That would be considered an inventor game.
Okay.
Hmm. Okay.
That's true. Tiger, I need to think outside the box a little bit more there. Actually, I do have that handheld Scrabble game. That's not bad.
Scrabble Express?
I don't remember. Little handheld.
Yeah, I think it's Scrabble Express.
Something like that, yeah. It's a good little game.
Thank you.
Well, I've got four more questions I'm just going to ax.
Really?
Yeah.
It's probably just as well.
And they're all reprint questions, and I know you guys can't answer them. Mm-hmm. Titan, Republic of Rome, these are all Avalon Hill things.
Mm-hmm.
Titan, great game. Played it many times.
Okay.
Republic of Rome, probably no chance.
It's all Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, it is all Wizards.
Yeah, we'll just skip all that.
No.
Oh, you know what?
Titan's
there's a
little long, though, isn't it?
Actually, there's a betrayal. Oh,
yeah, Titan. Although I hear if
you got to block out about 12 hours.
No. All the people who are really into Titan will, from what I understand, will dispute that.
Yeah, actually. I was
how many players?
Like, similar to your
two
your,
players, you can get a quick game in.
No, it's similar to your Monopoly refutation there.
Yep.
If you play it correctly, it doesn't last that long.
There we go.
Funny.
You mean original Titan rules?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, if you play it competitively, you should play very, very aggressively, and it doesn't last that long. If most people do not play it that way, though. So,
here's a Trump. Do you guys know anything about Trump Fabrique?
Trump Fabrique.
Trump Fabrique.
It was actually released by the European Hasbro, so they're probably not going to know anything about it.
I'll just skip it.
No, I don't know anything. I mean, I know the name. I know the game. But I don't know anything about the release.
Betrayal. Here's a betrayal question.
Betrayal on the house on the hill on the.
Hey, this is Rob Cannon from Atlanta, Georgia. Rob and Craig, love your games. Thanks so much for doing it. I know you're not directly responsible for Betrayal at House on the Hill, but since it is a Hasbro game, is there any plans to take what is the biggest FAQ in the world ever published for a game and incorporate it back into the rules to maybe a PDF downloadable version of the rules, or even better, a new printing of the rules that we could order for a small fee? Thanks.
I hate to say it, but Wizards of the Coast published Betrayal at House on the Hill, so they would be all the ones who would decide about FAQs and reprinting
rules. How does Hasbro deal with that kind of stuff? I mean,
from what I understand, our customer service just on missing parts and things that are broken is pretty good. I mean, I haven't seen too many people saying that customer service has let them down. So from what I understand, that's pretty top-notch. In terms of...
And they field rules questions as well.
They do field rules questions, probably not for Betrayal on House on the Hill. I work, like I said way back, I think on the show, though it might have been before we started, that I worked on that for a few years, and I just knew all of the possible loopholes that could be inherent in that game. And I don't think customer service would ever get up to speed on that. I really don't know what Wizards' plans are, man. They're probably waiting to see... you know, for the FAQ to sort of slow down and then make their decisions then, but that's kind of hypothesis.
Okay. I didn't know you guys were responsible for Epic Duels.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, I love that game.
Thank you.
There's a huge following of that game. It's not on the Board Game Geek, but there's like a Yahoo group. I don't know if you guys are on there.
I followed it right when the game was out, mostly... Sometimes I follow those things just to see if there's some colossal error we made, you know, that we absolutely put out something where someone's, you know, some strategy is broken or something like that. So I was following that as on the Yahoo group when people were coming up with new decks, and I think they were saying Vader was too weak.
Yeah, there was tons of new decks. I mean, I've been subscribed to it for a while, and I have, you know, I kind of every once in a while peek in, and there's just love that. People just love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a giant action figure model in my... You know, I roll out every now and then in my basement. Instead of playing with the minis, I play with the action figures.
Yeah, that's the advantage of working, you know, at Hasbro. You can take the actual board graphics, scale them up 600%, hit print on the giant printers.
Play like life-size.
Did you ever pick up the Transformers game?
I've heard of it.
It's got the same,
thing,
mechanic in it. And you can actually play, you know... I mean, you could play Transformers versus Star Wars if you wanted to.
And this is where HeroScape started.
It certainly has the same sort of mechanic to it.
So, yeah, that was kind of like an early thought process to HeroScape in a way.
Did you guys, like, did you get to go out to Lucas at all when you worked on that game? Or
I've been out to Lucas twice, three times, two or three times.
The Skywalker Ranch.
Yeah, I've been out to Skywalker Ranch.
Cool.
But not for that game. I've been out for Trivial Pursuit games, for the most part.
Hmm.
and some games that we're working on for this upcoming movie release in May.
The upcoming movie release, yeah.
What is that? Like our spring sometime?
Next year, right?
May 20-something, the 24th,
you know,
I think.
I was watching that teaser trailer came out. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who knew Darth Vader had such small hands? Do you know what I'm talking about?
What are you talking about?
Right. I have no idea. I guess I didn't watch it as closely as you did.
Well, you know I'm a geek.
Watch
it again.
Yeah.
And look at Darth Vader's hands when he's getting ratcheted up on this plank.
Well, he could be doing this or
something.
He's
tied up, and his hands
could
are
be
so
perspective.
Tiny. Just look at him.
One of them's a fake hand.
Well, that's true. But he's got the gloves. Anyway.
Okay, that is just crazy.
I don't even know
what you're talking about.
There's these little tiny hands.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Are you guys going to do an Incredibles game?
There's one out.
Is there?
Yep.
Because that's an incredible movie. Can I just say that straight up? I know you guys don't have anything to do with it, and I'm just stealing airtime here, but I have seen that twice, and my goodness, that is such a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I love it.
I love that movie. I saw it last weekend.
Yeah. I have no idea if kids like it. I don't care. I loved it.
It's my favorite Pixar movie by far.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could buy that.
Haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, then you're just a big loser.
I will see it.
Actually, yeah, something interesting came up the other day. Now, hang on. Let me finish the thought here.
Well, yeah, we're talking about Cradles of Filth.
Yeah.
Total geek moment. Am I wrong, or is it the very end? Isn't that Fantastic Four cover number one when the Mole Man comes up out of the ground?
I don't know.
I'm not really ruining the movie for those of you listening who haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that the end of the movie is like a tribute to Fantastic Four number one.
Actually, somebody brought up something interesting the other day when we were talking about this at work, and they were saying that it was the first part of the movie, the whole like going underground and crap like that. I didn't connect this, and I totally should have. Was straight out of The Watchmen.
Huh. Yeah, it was kind of out of The Watchmen.
Yeah, it totally was, and I didn't even occur to me that they, you know, like even the cape thing, because the fact that the capes were bad.
Yeah.
There was actually like one of the guys actually died because he had a cape in The Watchmen. It was in the footnotes.
I must be the only person who thinks The Watchmen is incredibly boring.
Yeah, but that's because you don't read. You're illiterate. You go play computer games and everything will be just great. Aldi's got a little case of ADD. You'll have to forgive him.
Twitch computer games.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my profession.
Yeah, that's what he does. He does computer games. So,
hey, so right. You know what it's time for?
What is time for?
Time for a roving reporter review from Teddy
Cheatham. Oh, Ted Cheatham.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a story about Ted, don't you, Rob?
Yeah. What's your story about? You met a roving reporter, Ted Cheatham, right?
I met him at Origins in 2000 for approximately 1.5 seconds. I was getting on the elevator. He was getting off. We recognized each other's badges. We said hello, and the door shut, and that's my entire experience with Ted.
That's, you know, frankly, that's about all you need. Honestly. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
But that 1.5 seconds was like
compressed.
Magic.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten it.
Yeah. Was he wearing underwear?
It was only 1.5 seconds.
Well, okay.
Couldn't tell.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
He was wearing pants.
Well, okay. So that's good. That's better than he usually does.
So this week we have a retro review.
Really?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It's a good game, though.
Oh.
Yes.
What is it?
Samurai.
Samurai. You know, as in Reiner Knizia?
Reiner Knizia Samurai.
Oh.
Yes. And he's got theme music.
Theme music?
Yes.
It's going to be like...
And he's got accents.
Oh, my God. We're going to hear from the NCAA ACP on this one, aren't we?
The what?
Do you get out of the cardboard box you live in? Oh, you're killing me.
Okay. And now for our weekly review. Ted, take it away.
Ohayou gozaimasu! Teddy-san Cheatham here to talk about Reiner Knizia's Samurai by Rio Grande Games. Welcome to the Orient. Reiner Knizia's Samurai by Rio Grande Games plays 2 to 4 players, ages 10+, in about 45 minutes. The Samurai, for centuries, the name has represented unfailing courage, imperturbable loyalty, and internal harmony. Today, the name is no less respected, and the story of the samurai myths and legends have become more and more popular. In Japan, there were 3 samurai forces: peasants, clergy, and nobility. The way to power in old Japan led through the peasants, the clergy, and the nobility. And to become a samurai, one had to be supported by one of these forces and have strong connections to the other two. In the game Samurai, the three forces are represented by rice fields, Buddhas, and high helmets. The pieces are presented in molded plexiglass, finely polished in noble black. Boy, what great pieces they are, too. To win, the players must skillfully position their forces to gain the majority surrounding the cities and villages to capture these figures in these three forces. What you have here is a tile position placement game. As soon as you surround a city, that city will score. The person with the most forces of each type will collect a piece from that city. The object of the game is to have the most control in several of those pieces. By the way, this is a game that's 6 years old. Why am I talking about a game that's back in 1998? Well, the answer is, it's going to be released, and it's a fine game worth taking a look at if you haven't checked it out already. But this is back in those days of Reiner Knizia's strange scoring. Euphrates Tigris comes to mind, as does Stevenson's Rocket. Lots of ways to score, and a strange little scoring mechanism at the end of the game. What's the bottom line? We've got a very strong tile position placement game, plays quickly with 2 to 4 players. Now, I've never played it with two. It could be a little bit like a game of chicken with two players. Whoever closes the last piece has a major impact on the scoring of each city. But it plays very well with 3 or 4, and I really believe the age 10 may be a little on the high side. I can recall my 8-year-olds playing this pretty darn well when it first came out. So if you're looking for an interesting game with a lot of little choices that plays pretty quick, this may be the game for you to check out. I think it's a very strong, solid game. Okay, well, let's open this box up and see what we've got inside. First off is what I call an extremely creative board that represents Japan. For two players, you play with the main island, Honshu. And I really like what Reiner Knizia has done by expanding the board for 3 or 4 players. What he's done is he's added other islands in Japan that fit like puzzle pieces right onto the existing board. So Honshu will expand to Kyushu and Shikoku for 3 players, and then you will add Hokkaido for a 4-player game. On the board are several cities where you're going to put these 3 force pieces, the Buddhas, the hi-hats, and the rice fields. There are small cities that are light blue, which will have one piece on them. There are medium cities, which are 2 red type of towers printed on them that will get 2 random pieces. And of course, you have the main city of Edo, which will get 3 pieces on it. The board island pieces are outlined in hexagons, so that you can place hexagonal-shaped pieces around the cities. The smaller cities typically can be surrounded by 2 or 3 pieces. The larger cities typically surrounded by 4 to 6 pieces. Next, you're going to have these great-looking black noble plexiglass pieces representing the high helmets, the Buddhas, and the rice fields. They're very tactically nice. And each player will receive an identical set of 20 hexagonal-shaped tokens, which I'll go over in just a moment. Now, the board is set up with the number of players. Again, the island expands for the number of players. And then the number of religious symbols, those 3 forces of the samurai, are going to be randomly put around the board based on the number of players. Next, each player is going to get a secret screen that's got exactly how the tokens play printed in English on the back, which is very nice, and their set of 20 tokens. At this point, a player is allowed to choose 5 of their 20 tokens and move them behind their screen, available for use in the game. Now, for new players, and the way I always play, because I typically play with my children, is that we just take 5 randomly. That's a variant out of the game. You take 5 random tokens instead of choosing your first starting 5. The remaining 15 tokens go in a face-down draw pile, and as you play tokens, you'll replenish back to 5 throughout the game. It adds a little random element in the game. So, a little bit more about the tokens. First off, you have 3 tokens for each of the forces of the samurai. So you have 3 tokens numbered 2, 3, and 4 for hi-hats, 2, 3, and 4 for Buddhas, and 2, 3, 4 for rice fields. That number shows your strength as it relates to that type of force. So a 3 hi-hat shows you have 3 forces of influence towards capturing a hi-hat once a hi-hat gets surrounded. You also have 5 one-point samurai tokens. Samurais are like wild tokens. They influence everything on the board, but they're only worth 1 point. You have 3 ships, which have a Japanese symbol on them. More on Japanese symbols in just a moment. These are all worth typically 1 point, and they can supplement an attack on land. You also have a Ronin, which is a wild horse with a Japanese symbol. And you have two special tokens, a figure exchange token and a token exchange token, both with Japanese symbols on them. Now, I've mentioned the Japanese symbol, and the importance of the Japanese symbol is, on your turn, you're allowed to play one standard token plus any number of tokens that have Japanese symbols on them. So, in theory, you could play several tokens on a turn. This helps you close out an area pretty quickly. The special token that has the figure exchange allows you to swap, for example, a hi-hat from one place with a rice paddy in another and swap them over. There are some special rules, which I don't need to go into, but that's basically what happens. And the token exchange, remember I told you had a 2-3-4, for example, in rice paddies. Well, once you've played your 4 power in your rice paddies, it's on the board and gone for the rest of the game. Whatever you captured with it is great, but you can't use it again. The token exchange is going to allow you to get one token that you've already played off the board and move it to a new spot. So once you understand your tokens, you've got your 5 tokens behind your screen, the game's ready to start. Basically, the first player will play a token on the board, one token of a standard token, and any amount of tokens with Japanese symbols. Then play continues clockwise around the table, everybody playing one or more tokens based on whether they have Japanese symbols or not. Eventually, one of the cities will be surrounded. When it's completely surrounded on land, that city will score. The symbol of power within the city will be given to the player surrounding that city that has the most influence on that type of item. For example, in a one small city that's got just a hi-hat, when that city is closed, whoever has the most influence on hi-hats will take the hi-hat token. Remember, some cities have 2 tokens in them, say for example a rice field and a hi-hat. Whoever has the most influence on the rice fields that surrounds that city will take the rice field, and whoever has the most influence on the hi-hat will take the hi-hat. There is a little bit an element of chicken in this game, because you don't want to be in the place where you leave a hole open in a city that somebody could play a token that would automatically let them get all the tokens in the city. And remember, with wild tokens and the Ronin, some tokens influence everything that's in the city. So it is very possible for one player to take 2 or 3 tokens out of a city, although unlikely. Also, if there's a tie, in terms of there's equal influence on that symbol, on that power symbol in the city, then that token is taken off and placed beside the board. If 4 ties occur in the game will end. Also, the game ends when there's only when the last figure of any type of the 3 power symbols, the hi-hat, the Buddha, or the rice field, is captured from the board. So you really need to watch out, because the game can end prematurely when somebody pulls the last symbol, even though you've got a great power sitting waiting to catch a rice field across the way. If they take the last token of another type, the game is over. You'll never get a chance to complete that city. The scoring is a little bit confusing at the first time you try it, and typical of Reiner Knizia back in those days. If a player has captured the most of 2 or 3 types of figures, they win immediately. This is pretty rare. That failing, any player who's captured the most in one type of figure has the chance to win the game. If you haven't got a majority in one type of figure, you're eliminated at this point and have no chance to win. By the way, ties do not count, so you can be eliminated by tying for the most as well. At that point, if you've won the most in one type of figure, you set those aside and count the rest. Whoever's got the most left over wins. Interesting little mechanic. It makes you balance throughout the course of the game to keep all kinds of things going on. You have to have the most to be eligible to win, and you have to have a lot left over besides the most majority in that one type of element. Okay, we've got us a good strong game here. My verdict, couple of things to watch out for here. Because it is a limited tile distribution game, it's very easy to get too much downtime with somebody that's a little over analytical. They can look at the board and realize what tiles ultimately near the end of the game the other person has behind their screen and what their capabilities are to influence the game. This could lend to analysis paralysis. Just be careful of that one. Second, sometimes it feels a little bit like a game of chicken. You're getting to the point where you don't want to play a tile, because if you do, you know somebody could slam you pretty easy. But that puts a lot of tension in the game, which I really like. So anyway, if you haven't played this one yet, it's worth your 45-minute investment. It's a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it. Good tile placement game with a lot of fun, quick, easy to explain and learn, and play with the family. So that's Ted Cheatham signing off from the feudal world of Japan.
Excellent review, Ted.
That's
thanks again.
Staggering.
Perfect.
Yeah. This is where you guys talk about how wonderful Ted is.
Wasn't that great?
That was great. Yeah. I mean, it was longer than 1.5 seconds, so now I feel like I know him better.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's true. That's true. So, all right. Well, so we got any other questions?
Should we do the book?
I don't know. Yeah. Sure.
I got a PSA.
Oh, okay.
The following is a public service announcement from GeekSpeak.
It's your move, Dirk!
Analysis paralysis strikes thousands of gamers weekly, affecting all those around them. In many cases, GeekSpeak has been proven to be an effective therapeutic remedy and is available without prescription.
You like that one?
I like the walking bass. That's a nice touch.
That's a very nice PSA.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Full disclosure here, I am not the one that suffers from analysis paralysis. That's just me.
I know, it's just funny though.
No, I know, it's
funny.
You're
an easy target.
Yeah, sure. I'm always a target. All right, so at the end of all of our shows, we do what we affectionately entitle The Hook, gentlemen. And this is where we kind of go over some of your favorite games. So... we can start with either one of you. It doesn't really matter. Basically, I'd like to know what you guys like. Just overall best game for two players.
I don't know.
Oh.
Well, for me, it's Magic the Gathering.
Really?
Yeah.
Old Magic the Gathering kind of guy, are you?
Yeah, I love it.
Do you play
it.
Online?
I don't play online, but I play regularly with a guy named Mike Gray. You know, Mike Gray's the guy that designed Shogun and a bunch of, like, a ton of mass market games.
It was also
Fortress America.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I used to report directly to him.
Hmm.
He's in Inventor Relations right now. But, you know, we get together frequently and play Magic. He's a big Magic guy, too.
So you guys get free copies of Magic cards?
No, we don't get
no. Not even Mike does, but he buys so many that he gives us all the ones he doesn't need.
That's right. We get his extra commons.
You get like the second tier stuff then, because he
right.
takes all the good. He takes all the Moxie stones and shit like that.
Yeah, he has. I don't. Does he still have a Craig? I think he has 4 of every card ever published.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a lot of cards.
But the great thing about Magic is that it's so versatile. I mean, if you have a collection of cards, I mean, and you have a collection of decks. It really is, I feel, the best two-player game ever invented.
Wow.
It's up there.
Well, it's all right.
For me, anyway, I like it too.
I get tired of the rules discussions all the time, and I hate having to, like, oh, now what does that thing do? Oh, what does
that
do?
That's problem. If you don't keep up with it,
oh,
you have to reread every
that?
Card every
yeah.
time.
Yeah. I won't deny that there used to be a point in which I had one of those 3-ring binders full of cards, and I just sit there and page through it day after day after day after day and go, wow, look at the pretty pictures. But
look at those Moxies.
I never had any of those.
Did you have a Black Lotus?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I got in with Revised or something like that.
Oh, yeah, you missed the boat.
Yeah, I got like a box of Legends, and that was my claim to fame. Like, I ended up selling most of the good
ones.
For
like a grand. Yeah.
Two-player, though, I mean, Rob and I just played, what was it, War of the Ring?
No, we're big into War of the Ring.
That's
these days.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, let's talk about War of the Ring.
Oh, we got to talk about War of the Ring again?
We don't have to, other than we stay up till 3 in the morning and I won.
Okay, who plays Shadow?
And Scrabble.
Plays
you got to throw in Scrabble there, two-player game.
Yeah, I do like Scrabble.
That's a two-player abstract more than a word game these days.
Well, we should let Rob answer real quick before we talk about War of the Ring.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be very bad at this game because I don't have strong favorites.
You don't have favorites?
So, I mean, it depends who I'm... I mean, I played Lost Cities the other day, and I really liked it, but I was playing with my daughter. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it, you know, that's what I was just amazed that she could play. But
how old is she?
5.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
So, she can't hold the card, so there's elaborate forts set up with pillows. But she gets the general concept. And
there's a thing out there that lets kids hold cards. I can't remember what it is.
There's all kinds of, like...
it's like a little paperclip kind of thing.
And you just need pillows from the couch.
Well, that works,
too. Well, sure. Forts
are good. Rack.
Forts are good.
Yeah.
A couple Scrabble racks put next to each other.
Memoir racks, actually.
Memoir racks.
Memoir 44 racks.
Oh, those would work, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Memoir 44, that's another great two-player game.
Yeah.
All right, War of the Ring.
All right, War of the Ring.
Okay.
Who's who?
Who plays
No,
who?
Wait a minute. Actually, let me take a guess. Craig, you strike me as a Sauron player.
Correct.
Just, I don't know why, but to me, you know, Rob, you strike me as the kind of guy who's got the hope, based on hope, you know, like, I know I can put that ring in the crack of doom. I know I can. But anyway.
No, you got us pegged.
Yeah. Wow. What a huge surprise. How many times have you guys played?
I've played five, maybe.
Yeah.
Four or five. It's a long game. It doesn't feel long, but I woke up and go, why is it 1:30 in the morning?
Really?
That last game we played was like, it was a long game. But you know what? The time goes by, and you just, you know, when I heard about people playing a 6-hour or whatever, you know, their first game experience was 6 hours, but they were telling me how they had a really great time. I found that hard to believe.
Yeah.
But then you play the game, it's like, you know, it, time flies.
Aldi's not going to agree with
I
you
won't.
Here.
You know what? I'm going to bite my tongue.
Yeah. You know, it's important.
Maybe I just need to accept that I'm not a war gamer.
I think you need to accept the fact that you're ADD. I'm totally
That's probably
serious.
True.
That is it.
That's
I mean,
probably true.
I thought it was all right. I thought it was a little professional. I mean, it's not. It's no higher than, a 7. It's like 7.5 on my 10-point scale. But, I mean, I'm not very inclined towards those kinds of games. It's slow, but... I thought it was all right, honestly. And I
well, are you a Lord of the Rings fan?
No, not particularly.
Well, that, you know.
That's probably the problem.
That would factor into your rating a little bit.
No, I don't think it does, because even if it was, I might even counteract it, because I don't like to do, you know. I unlike Rob, I actually am not very forgiving on theme. I need mechanics before I can even address the theme. But that's just
I think that's why I like it particularly so much. I've spent... past couple of years working on a lot of Lord of the Rings games for Hasbro, so I've been really immersed in that license and that world, and I thought this was something that really did a good job of
incorporating almost everything.
Yeah, I sort of made the same decisions or made opposite decisions, you know, based on the books and the movies, but without feeling like I was doing it for mechanics' sake. I was doing it kind of felt like theme, like it was a story was being told, which is what I liked.
I will agree with that, actually, and that's one of the reasons that it gets as high a score as it does for me anyway. I mean, as a pure war game, it's really not much better than, say, Risk. But, I mean, I will agree that and I'm not a big fan of Risk, the fact that they were able to put as much theme into it without making the mechanics suffer unduly was very amazing. I agree.
So. Have you picked up the new Risk?
Which new Risk?
There's a new Risk that has the Revolutionary War guys in it.
No,
or,
I sure
a redo
haven't.
Of Risk.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's the Risk. It's sort of like what we call a Risk refresh.
Mm.
But I mean, Rob worked on team rules for Risk because 6-player was always a little bit, you know, if you went last in Risk was
yeah. If you went last, you're the guy who got pizza 20 minutes later.
You're usually going to pick up the pizza.
Yeah.
But we worked on some team rules in there that are a lot of fun.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I mean, war games are not exactly my particular interest, especially multiplayer war games. Our agreement was, Aldi and I, that he got War of the Rings, and I would play that with him when I didn't necessarily want to, and now he has to play Europe and Golf with me. Yeah. What do you think of that? Did I get the better end of the deal or not?
I haven't played Europe and Golf, but...
Yeah, I know, but I'm going to make him suffer. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. So,
all right, I'm not commenting on World of the Ring.
You didn't like it.
Not my favorite.
You went from like a 7.5, so an 8 to like a 5. A 6, he says. A 6.
All right.
He's just wrong. Like I said, he can't keep his attention span for that long.
Yeah, that's probably the truth.
I mean,
that's
it requires a certain level of planning, like roads and boatsy kind of
thing. I have never played, when I was growing up, these really long war games. I never played the Axis and Allies. I never played Risk until I was, like, much later. So I didn't grow up on a long game. So maybe that affects me in later life.
Dead All right, silence. So let's go ahead to the next question.
Bunch of crickets.
Number 3. 3 players. Any favorites there?
3-player. My favorite 3-player is 99.
99 is what I was going to say.
99?
Yeah, I know that card game.
Yeah,
that's the one.
The what?
You're trying to get to 99.
It's a trick-taking game.
Huh.
Craig and I are
You're trying to get to 99 points?
No, the best you can score in one hand is 99 points. I think you might be able to get to, I think you might be trying to get to that score as well.
Yeah, you are.
But it's a trick-taking bidding game that works with three.
With a regular deck?
You have to take some of the cards out. I forget which one. Some of the lower cards. I think it's maybe only five and up. Hmm. The fives and up.
Interesting. I didn't know that. It sounds vaguely euchre-ish.
No. The real trick is in the bidding. The way you bid is by taking cards out of your hands and putting them face down as a blind bid. So, with different suits being worth different amounts.
Hmm.
So, you know, you might say, oh, I've got this great two-bid hand, but the cards you have to take out to make that bid makes your hand a four-bid hand.
And it throws off the mix.
It throws off
what
the mix.
What cards you take out definitely affect how you play. I mean, you try and bid exactly how many you're going to take. But the game, I mean, like you can play with your bid open, you can play with your hand open, and that tends to double it or triple your score. And it's harder to do it that way,
that
but sometimes that factors in.
When I was growing up, that's a different game. 99.
No way.
This one sounds much more complex.
Sounds much more fun.
A 99 card. Oh, I think I know what you're talking
There's
about.
There's a 99 where you like count.
That was
to
more like Finch or something like that.
You count to 99 or something like that. It was, it was like 8 years old when I played it. So
Go
it
Fish.
It definitely wasn't a trick taking game.
Go Fish.
Go
Fish. Not Go Fish.
Go Fish is better with four.
Do you have any eights?
Go Fish.
Okay.
And Settlers is a fun for three.
Yeah, I like Settlers for three, especially I like it with Knights and Cities.
Yeah, we agree with that.
That is correct.
Yeah. We agree on that one.
Four players.
How do you feel about four?
Monopoly.
Excellent. Nice answer.
Wait. Which version?
Yeah, which version? The Looney Tune version? Star Wars version? NASCAR version? Okay. Which is it?
Whatever one I worked on.
Now, when you guys develop a new Monopoly, how much work actually goes into it?
Like 10 minutes, right?
Game design? Not as much.
I mean,
as
you're
other
just
games,
basically changing the properties and the cards.
Change the properties, the cards, new pieces. Certainly there's not
it's,
as much.
It's a quick.
Yeah,
it's, a quick
it's,
turnaround.
It's on the quicker end of things.
Okay.
I think 10 minutes is kind of.
I mean, we added a few wrinkles to when you roll the die, I think, right?
We started putting in rules that, you know.
Like Looney Tune rules.
Yeah, every game has one rule that's different from other Monopolies. We started to do that. Okay. I think Looney Tunes was the first one.
Do you use that free parking space for anything other than free parking?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. So. What we never do is put money under it.
So. I think that's why I hate the game, because the free parking always kept people in the game.
Well, that's the wrong rule. It's not a rule, the first thing in the FAQ says, please don't put money under free parking.
Right.
Yeah, it
but when I grew up, that's how I was taught it.
That's how everyone plays it.
Yeah.
And
it's passed on as like legend. You know, it's just passed on.
You know, just because everybody does it doesn't make it right, Aldi.
Right.
Come on, dude. All right. Do we have any other answers for four?
Four player?
There's a lot of good four player games. I'm like standing in my game room trying to look around. We're trick-taking people. I still love Hearts.
Oh, yeah?
There's a group of us who get together and play Hearts.
You play much Teachu, do you?
Teachu? No.
Oh.
Should I be?
Need to pick that up.
Oh, right. Yeah. Teachu.
Right. You will play no other
excellent
hand game besides that one.
Ladder game is what ladder they call game. It, yeah.
We play a ladder game at lunch every day.
Shoots and ladders?
Yeah, shoots and ladders. I've got the best. I am a master at that game.
You try to avoid the shoots.
Yes.
Yeah, and take the ladders.
The trick.
And you learn life lessons.
That's what I've been missing.
Dirk?
Dude, I so got your number next time we play. This time, I tell you what.
No.
What do you guys play? Like,
We play Oh Hell.
Oh Hell?
Yeah. Lunch. Okay. Oh, a version of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, game designers that we are, we balanced it and made it so that you can get the leader. And
we
can get the leader.
Seasons that last 13
weeks. You guys have like five German games designs in you already. I mean, I can just from talking.
What's
like
that
99? I never heard of it with a trick-taking thing.
You should try it.
And
I mean, you could probably do a search online as far as like to get the rules.
Yeah, it was, I wish I could remember his name. It is by a card game author. It's in his book of card games. Maybe David Parlett?
Parlett, yeah.
Or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
It might be, it's by someone designed it and put it tucked into a book of games, and Mike Gray, the guy who Craig was talking about playing Magic with, showed it to us, and we became quite enamored of it.
I'd like to give it a shot sometime. Maybe if I haven't pissed you off too much about my Monopoly questions, you guys can teach me someday.
You have not irked me in the least.
Have we got any other four players? Oh, wait, we got Ohel.
Yeah.
Well, Ohel, actually, we play when we with more players. Part of the reason we play it at lunch is it's very scalable.
Yeah.
It plays four up to ten, depending on, you know, people coming in to... can't be in all the big hands, so we have elimination rounds and things, but that's part of the reason we do it. So depending who's at work that day, we don't have to worry about what number of players we have. Hmm. That's how we kind of settled on that.
German Ohel. Is it Wizards?
No. Wizard.
Wizard.
Yeah, Wizards. Wizard. Is very close to it.
And we play it. I mean, like we said before, we play, you know, as many new games as we can. So, I mean, as far as four-player games that we've been playing lately, I mean, we've been playing San Juan, St. Petersburg. Both of those games we enjoy.
Do you guys have, like, a game library at work? Do you have a
budget? Yeah, we do.
Budget? Yeah? Cool.
Where do you buy your games, then? I was joking. You don't need to answer that.
Okay.
All different places. Sometimes they just appear, which is the best part.
Really?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, someone says, here, can you try this out? I heard good things about it. You go, okay. Hmm.
I mean, so, in other words, you take designer submissions, in other words. Everybody who has a little game that they're trying to sell, they should send it to you?
Please don't. I can't look at them.
Trash.
Yeah, we would have to send them back.
We have to send them back unopened.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right, because you guys need plausible deniability and all that, don't you?
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I mean, like, you should try and, I mean, there's a certain amount of representatives that we work with, and I would encourage any aspiring game designer to, you know, contact a representative. And
is that like
if you have a passion for games, then go for it.
I mean, like, what's the way you get into that? You just contact that company that does the...
I think we have a list of...
We have a list of agents, brokers. I'm trying to think of the right word. Brokers, representatives. They're like agents.
Yeah.
And what they do is they look at game submissions from people who are trying to get into the business. They winnow it down, and then they show us and other game companies what they think are, you know, the star games, and they either work, I think, either for a fee or for a cut of the royalty. But that, and you know, it gives legitimacy when a broker comes up and says, yeah, I've looked at this guy's games. He had some good stuff. Here are three of them. And you don't get that when you just cold call yourself and say, I've got some game ideas.
Right.
But we do have a list of them, but I wish I could remember the...
Well, maybe it's on the website or something.
Actual title. I think they're brokers.
Yeah, that actually sounds familiar. I think that's the term I've
heard. You know what
I've been... It's called.
I've been getting a lot of emails from potential designers, and I've been forwarding them to www.bgdf.com, Board Game Designers Forum.
I've been there a few times.
Just an FYI, because I get at least one or two a week. So, if anybody's listening,
it's important to note that we don't actually have control over all assets or all facets of our database. So,
right.
Those of you who are listening that are upset about the Cabbage Patch game, it's not that we think that adoption is something that, you know, is good or whatever. I'm sorry, everybody's all upset about this, but they send us these emails. They say,
in the Cabbage
Patch
How come
you guys are making light of the fact that kids, these really troubled kids, are getting passed around from parent to parent? And I go, there's a Cabbage Patch game?
Dirk and I were part of we were targets of a letter writing campaign last week.
Really?
Yeah, about the Cabbage Patch game.
Oh, I didn't know there was. I mean, actually, you know what? I should have guessed it was a Cabbage Patch game.
Yeah. Well, apparently it makes light of adoption. I didn't know. Yeah. Anyway,
well, that were evil, but all right.
Five player.
We're losing control. Five player, gentlemen.
Five player.
Five player is tough. Let's see.
Oh, I should have planned ahead.
I think I'll have to say, currently it's that Die Steven Seagal, and I know I'm probably mispronouncing it.
Oh, yeah.
Die Steven Seagal.
It's
yeah,
another...
Can you tell me, like, trick-taking games?
Yeah, it's another trick-taking
game. Yeah, trick-taking games.
No.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good game. I like it.
So I actually, and this is going to be another one of those long war game type things, but I really like a Game of Thrones.
Really?
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Because I really like the books, and I thought I did a good job. Again, it's I'm a sucker for theme. I thought I did a good job of feeling like the books feel.
Hmm. And I've certainly heard that. Yeah.
You haven't played it?
No, I haven't played it. Hmm. It's one of those, though, that keeps getting mentioned in the same, like, thought as War of the Ring.
Right.
Where it's a good game, but...
It's long. It's another one that's long, and there's... I mean, I like it because as much as I like playing Diplomacy, I don't know if I've ever finished a game of Diplomacy. And this has sort of a feel of Diplomacy. I have finished
it. Yeah, it does.
But as a feel of Diplomacy, but a sort of a more manageable parameters.
Yeah, but have you ever finished a game of Diplomacy and didn't want to kick somebody's ass?
No.
I think I finished a game of Thrones and wanted to kick somebody's ass.
That was one of the first games Rob played when we were...
That was actually my first day of work. We had just gotten the Avalon Hill license.
When he came to Hasbro, Parker Brothers.
Yeah, it was my first day.
Let's get him into a game of Diplomacy.
I never played Diplomacy. This is an addition to Scruples. I never played Diplomacy. I'd seen it and I knew of it, but I didn't know the rules that well. I mean, I knew the general concept. And there were some people who were going to be playtesting it to get everyone back up to speed before we did the refresh for Avalon Hill. And I hear him talking in the next cube. It was an empty cube at the time. And they were like going to have the board there and talking. And someone's saying, oh, we need a game master. We really need a neutral game master. We need a game master. And so eager to please, I lean over the wall and go, oh, I'm the new guy. I'll be a game master. What is it? Yeah. Oh, it's Diplomacy. You want to play? Sure. And then I had to go home and read the rules and realize how incredibly over my head I was on my first day. And
he had to adjudicate everything.
Adjudicate. And then someone dropped out. And then I had to take over. And then in addition to all these horrible questions I had to ask at Scruples, I ended up stabbing France and turned out to be Larry Harris, the guy who did Axis and Allies. And he had it coming, though.
And he thought he had the Diplomacy game wrapped up.
Yeah. And we stabbed him because he looked at me and said, I got this game won.
I can prove you wrong. That's an interesting concept for a game, Diplomacy, but a little faulty on the execution. Just too darn long and too darn bitter for what it is that you're getting.
It is a bitter game. I mean, I felt bad. I had people over once and we played Diplomacy. And it was like on the second turn, everyone independently, literally without talking to each other, because we were all like newbies. I know the real professional players would never make these sorts of mistakes. But we all decided that we'd each nibble on one of Russia's supply centers and took them out of the game on the second turn. Because all four of us each took one.
Actually, I was in the game, and I was Russia, and I had put together this game, a bunch of buddies of mine in college. Nobody had ever played Diplomacy, and I talked it up. And in fact, an old buddy of mine from out of town had come into town, and he had talked it all up and whatnot. And so we sit down, and we're just getting started, and I was Russia. I actually was, and everybody on the very, very first turn screwed me. And so I basically spent, I'd gone through all this trouble of setting the game up. I had the game. It was my copy. And what did they do? They eliminate me on the first turn.
Damn.
Yeah.
So
did you get the pizza?
Well, then you're free to adjudicate.
PlayStation.
Screw the adjudication. I went in and watched TV. I was pissed. I think I did get the pizza, though.
Then you can't be biased. You're out of the game.
No. No, but you don't understand. It goes beyond that. Brandon, I will haunt you when I'm dead.
You think Brandon's listening?
Oh, hell no. But still.
All right, so...
six players or party games.
No, party games.
Yeah.
Player party games. I like a lot of the party games that we make.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite ones is Beyond Balderdash, which I don't know if we make anymore, but we did make.
Yeah, that's a good game, actually. That's a great game.
Yeah. But you have to play it with the right crowd of people.
Definitely.
Oh, sure.
You know, I remember I played it one time with some people, and almost all of them were clever, and one of them wasn't.
No,
if you read the definition.
We know that.
The weakest link.
Yeah, you get to that one definition, you're like, oh, that's hers. Okay.
Yeah. So, although every once in a while, the weakest link actually gets...
Surprises you.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a game where it's one of the few games where I played where I've laughed so hard. It's like on three separate occasions, someone's choked on, their mm-hmm. beverage. And that always, to me, is a good thing. Well, they've all made it through.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out okay.
Yeah, well, you ought to not drink so much when you're playing. But now my only real problem with the game is I wish it didn't last quite as long as it did. But
Other than that, I really like it.
I mean, six player, for me anyway, a lot of the games that we make, Scattergories and Catchphrase, Taboo, a lot of the classic party games, you know, are staples when I go home to play with my family. But a six player, that's a tough, tough number to have, for everyone to have a good chance of winning at the end and have a good experience. I tend to think that when you get into that numbers, sometimes it's better to play historical miniatures where it's like 3-on-3 on a side. And that six players for miniatures is a lot of fun. I don't know if you guys...
I used to play Warhammer. Yeah. It's not really historical, but it's
miniatures. Any sort of miniatures, really.
Sure.
Something where you can go into...
I like the whole, you know, team... for me, six players, it's more fun when it's 3-on-3, some sort of big team game. It's tough to get a good... I'm trying to think of a good six-player game.
But there's a game that I like for six players, although it is long, but it's a casual game, which is History of the World. I just like it with six players. So, but it's a long, sprawling game. That's going to take a good chunk of time to play with six.
All right.
Not my favorite.
What do you guys like for six?
History of the World is not it. Well, I mean, the thing is, as my good friend Ken characterized it, he once picked up a copy of the old MicroProse version of it on 3¼ or something like that, 5¼ or something like that.
Five and a quarter.
I don't remember. Yeah, it was on tape, cassette tape.
Yeah. Where it took an hour to load.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, he played it, and he played, you know, and the AI was okay, but it was like one of those things where, like he said, that you, once you played that, you didn't really have a huge desire to play it face to face, but just because the downtime on it is just so horrific. I don't know. I know that's really funny coming from a guy that enjoys like Java.
But is the downtime any more than Titan?
Well, okay, I won't deny that. But... Titan's one of those games you got to play fast, and you got to have a PlayStation 2 sitting
Well,
next
you
to
know,
it.
You could say the same thing for History of the World.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that there is some downtime in History of the World, and you need the right crowd of people. You need people who maybe haven't seen each other in a while, so you're willing to sort of socialize and catch up when it's not your turn, because sure. There is some quite a bit of downtime. But, yeah. Again, it falls into those games that always attract me with a lot of theme and drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we don't actually play games. To answer your question, Craig.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Come on.
No, I was joking.
We've been in a drought recently, though.
Yeah, bit of a drought.
Bit of a drought over here in Dallas.
Yeah, but anyway, but we got some War of the Ring lately.
We've been playing War of the Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Six is tough, actually. I think our favorite for both of us was Time's Up.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys heard of that one.
I've heard of it. I'm trying to think if I've played it. I don't think I've played it.
Have you played
it.
Celebrities? The charades game Celebrities?
Nope.
It's really good, actually. You guys should pick it up. It's really quite good.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those games, every time I stumble across a list on your site or something with party games, it's always on there, and I've always said, you know, I got to find a copy of that.
It ain't tough. No, I mean, in comparison.
Well, gift stores, he says.
I don't know. All the online stores have them.
Yeah.
I don't know, mostly. But...
All right, should we move on to my part?
I don't know. Am I done?
Are you done? What, is there
I like the
player?
Spotlight. I'm just... Maybe there's a seven-player game that they like. No? Okay.
Well.
Monopoly.
Rob's going to have a really good time with yours, by the way.
I'm going to give Rob... Rob, what's your favorite game of all time?
I don't know.
Hot lava.
I like games that actually tend to sort of spark a whole different direction of thinking about games. Like, I like Magic the Gathering for the idea of thinking about constructing something before you come to the table. I like Dungeons & Dragons because it sort of pioneered role-playing games.
Yeah.
I mean, my personal favorite game is probably First Edition Dungeons & Dragons, not because it's the best game, but because I have the best, most fond memories of it.
Okay. It's
sort of the game that made me a gamer, you know, game designer.
Interesting.
All right.
Okay, Craig, since you're more organized.
Yeah. I would have to go with a deck of cards.
Just a deck of cards? I was going to ask you what your top three favorite games of all time are.
Oh, my top three?
Yeah, because
Three decks of cards.
Three deck of cards, deck of cards.
You could play a really big a game of war with that.
That's a tough question. Three.
Battle! Ding, 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 ding. Aha! My king is better than your queen. You suck. I'll take all of your cards. This is Dirk filling dead air, by the way. This is
well, I really enjoy, like I said before, Magic the Gathering. It's certainly one of the innovators in the gamer market as far as two-player games. And you can play multiplayer Magic the Gathering. Deck of cards would have to be in there. Scrabble is one of my all-time favorites. I play it with my family all the time.
You know what I hear is a really good game?
What's that?
HeroScape.
HeroScape.
Yeah.
It's one. I'm trying not to name HeroScape, but it's certainly one of my favorites. And I think once the boosters come out, it's going to like take it to the next level.
What's the deal with the boosters? You can see inside them, so what you're going
to
get.
Yeah, you need to know exactly.
So
what
there's
you're
no collectability
get.
To it.
No.
Well, it's collectible in that
expandable.
Expandable, not.
Yeah, it's collectible in that. The Wave 1 boosters won't be around forever. You know, it's more drive by Opal.
Get them while they can. And, yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
So,
But if you're talking Euro games, yeah, Lowenherz has always been one of my favorites.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love Lowenherz. That's
not me.
One of my...
Yep.
I went through a streak where I never lost the game, and that's why Rob hates it.
I'm like 0-30.
Are you the guy that gets squeezed out, Rob?
It doesn't matter. Like, you know, I'll just play a game and I'll lose, and I'll next game I'll say, I'm just going to do what Craig did last game, and then I lose worse.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that I enjoy playing, but I've absolutely given up on any pretense of winning.
Right.
That game always has one person that gets squeezed out and just... You feel bad for him.
I don't know
Screw
what I'm...
Screw him. Dude, that is the whole point of Lowenherz.
It's usually
make
me.
People suffer. And make people suffer for a long period of time.
So, I do well in one part of it and feel good, and then just forget the rest. I bid poorly. Or I do something wrong.
Have you guys played the reprint? The
Domain. Yeah, that's good, too.
I lost at that one, too.
Hmm. Is there a game that you don't lose at, Rob?
War.
And role-playing games don't count.
Yeah, bro. No, I do some.
I'm the DM.
Rob,
I win.
Rob just advanced screw in our you. Little tournament. We were running a HeroScape tournament in the finals or something like that.
No, I do well in word games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't want to play Robin Scrabble.
Oh, yeah.
We got a guy here who you don't want to play in any word game at all.
Yeah. Well, actually, he probably wouldn't be great at Scrabble, but anything that requires, like, vocabulary kicks your ass. He says, "What's that?" And then you go, "What is that?" He's like, "Oh, that's the brass tip for the soldiers in Carthaginian history for when they were going to war. They wanted to hang their secondary coats of armor on it." And you go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. See.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing is like. Do you have to define what word you put down? Because most of the words that I learned was from playing the handheld game, which is like you start to memorize like XI and XU and
all the two-letter words.
Yeah, because that's what the good Scrabble players.
Yeah,
that's why I don't like the game, actually. It's much more of an abstract strategy game, a la chess or something like that, than it is an actual word game.
That's true, because, I mean, the words have been divorced of any meaning.
Mm-hmm. And somebody was trying to tell me the other day they had, like, some word that uses Q without a U and an X or something like that.
I don't know if there's one that uses both of those, but there are a number of words that use a Q without a U.
Yeah.
So it was. It represents H. Mm. There you go.
No, it's some, like...
Q-A-T is one.
Q-A-T?
Yeah.
Quad. Yeah.
But it's not like a kitty cat. I forget what it is.
Well, it was some quigmalmium word or whatever it is that Welsh, or not Welsh or whatever. I'm just going to go ahead and go on to the next topic. All right.
Yeah, so
that was
there's
it?
No more next topics.
Was that it? Oh. All right. Cool. Well, all right. So do we have anything else we got to cover, or are we about done?
Is there anything you guys wanted to throw out there?
No, I want to just thank you for... thinking of us and having us on the show.
Yeah,
well, thanks a lot.
You guys for coming on.
We check out your site quite often.
Well,
I would like
to
thank
know.
The people you know who post to the site because that's the, you know, best feedback we get, because you put a game out on the shelf and you can sometimes see how it's selling, or you can sometimes hear, you know, rumors and, oh, my nephew played it and he really liked it. But to read one of those reviews, positive or negative, about a game that's well thought out is, you know, it really does make a difference, because you can see what you did right and what you did wrong, so hopefully you get it better on the next game.
Cool.
So it is read by the designers, and we do listen.
All right.
Unless you say Hasborg.
That's only Dirk.
I didn't say that.
I know.
I intentionally did not say that, because I'm kind of with Rob on this one. It's been done. So
yeah.
It's been driven into the ground, something fierce.
Yeah, well, thanks to all the callers.
Yeah, especially the ones that we didn't listen to.
Sorry for if we didn't use your question, but, you know.
Have you thought about a Cosmic Encounter at Axies and Ally?
we have, but we're actually doing it as Axies and Allies Cosmic Encounter.
Oh!
Completely different.
Wow.
Yeah, you can see how it's better that way.
Cool.
So do we have another show coming up?
I don't remember. I think this was it, actually, till Christmas.
Wait.
I think so.
Fill the air.
I'll fill the air now. Yeah, these boys probably want to go to bed. It's, like, late where they are and stuff, you know. But anyway, I do want to apologize to everybody for the fact that Aldi's so unprepared, especially to our guests. Craig and Rob, you guys have been really good, despite Aldi's lack of preparation. But, and of course, I had nothing to do with it.
Well, you didn't have anything to do with it at all.
Exactly. You see why it's not my fault, then. All right. Cool. Well, again, I do appreciate you guys taking the time to speak with us. It's been pretty good. Very good, actually.
Unless we come up with something next week, this is the last Geek Speak of the year.
Yeah.
I feel honored.
Yeah.
It's our pleasure.
We may come up with something, though, because, you know, Dirk likes to hear himself talk.
That's not true.
All right.
But I do appreciate all the hard work you guys are putting in, especially I really, really appreciate the Heroescape. That's been a heck of a thing.
Thank you for playing.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. All right. Cool. You guys have a good Christmas and a Happy New Year and all that stuff.
All right.
Yeah, well, all listeners, Happy New
Year.
Not
necessarily a good
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
That's not politically
Happy
correct.
Happy
Kwanzaa. I'll celebrate them all.
It's called Kwanzaa Merry Christmas, something like that. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Happy holidays.
It's very politically correct.
How white bread is that?
Happy holidays right back at you.
And unless we talk to you guys next time, see you in 2005.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
You've been listening to GeekSpeak at BoardGameGeek.com. If you have a question or comment for the show, please drop us a voicemail at 1-800-849-4236. The GeekSpeak theme was written and performed by Beatnik Turtle. www.beatnikturtle.com. This has been a presentation of BoardGameGeek.com, your online community for board games.